Welcome. We'd like to begin our Oro Valley Town Council meeting this evening. It's April 3rd, 2024. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones Ivy. Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have six of seven council members present. If you'd please stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Water Utility Commission will hold a study session on April 12th at 12:45 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then the Budget and Finance Commission will meet next on April 16th at 4 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. The April 16th Parks and Recreation Advisory Board meeting has been canceled. And then the next town council regular session is scheduled for April 17th at 6 p.m. here in the council chambers. And then we also have one more slide. We have some more upcoming events for the OV Path Forward. So if you have an opportunity to attend one of these, the town encourages you to do so. Otherwise, you can also find more information out at www.ovpathforward.com. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. We'll go to council reports this evening. Council reports. I'd like to thank our Parks and Recreation Department for a wonderful event this past Saturday at James D. Cree Park. It's the annual extravaganza. It was there were a lot of young people. Fortunately, we had 20,000 Easter eggs for them to gather from the fields at James D. Cree. A lot of smiles. So I want to thank the Parks and Rec Department for that. I'd also like to acknowledge a sobering event that occurred this past Sunday. As you know, the law enforcement community is like a large family, even though they serve various jurisdictions. Officer Adam Buckner was unfortunately killed as he responded to a call to service, and simply wanted to acknowledge the this unfortunate event, a sobering reminder. I often say that our men and women in uniform put their lives on the line each day in the protection of their communities. Officer Buckner was an outstanding individual, married, leaves a wife, parents, and three brothers. And so I just want to express my condolences to the city of Tucson and to all law enforcement agencies for the loss of this officer. We'll go to Mr. Wilkins' report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Of course, this Saturday is our parade for the 50th. Hopefully, I'll see many of you out there. Also, along the lines of the parade, art in Oro Valley, the gallery exhibit at the Ventana Gallery at Roche has one more month. There was a kickoff exhibition at back in January, but still have time. So Saka and Roche worked for that art exhibit. So please try to make arrangements to go. Also coming soon is our digital OV 50th timeline. So you'll watch for our Vista newsletter. Give you a QR code to be able to access that timeline. And also in the Vista, you'll see some advertisement. We have 220 public art exhibits throughout town, and gives you an opportunity to take a tour with one of our tour guides. So you'll be able to take advantage of that. Of course, now coming up, Naraha Project is moving along. And we'll be having a grand opening in May, so more announcements around that will be coming soon. And also like to congratulate a few new businesses, 3 Degrees Infrared Sauna Studio on Tangerine, Linda Vista Luxury Rentals on Linda Vista Boulevard, Lounge by Levitt's, that was formerly Ashley Home Store, and Valerie Ogborn is a clinical psychologist on La Cañada. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkins. Tonight's agenda will remain as posted. We'll go to call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. When you come forward to the podium, if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley or not. Tim Terrace.
Go to the shot clock in place. Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, Council and staff, my name is Tim Terrace, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. I live directly across the street to the west from the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. I would like to make reference to some of the activities that take place in our neighborhood. Please keep in mind the word of the day is shenanigans. Merriam-Webster defines shenanigans as a devious trick used especially for an underhanded purpose, tricky or questionable practices, or conduct usually used in plural or high-spirited, mischievous activity. The church, taking advantage of our possibly vaguely worded town codes, has changed course to try and continue their expansion. Their new plan would bypass the 14 neighbors who signed and submitted their objections in order to have their new application approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission, i.e. appointed officials, and bypass this body, i.e. elected officials. We have been told that they wish to build a new sanctuary with basketball courts included that will seat 1,500. They will most likely be asking for a height variance up to 45 feet. This begs the question, is it a 25-foot building with a 20-foot cross on the top or a 44-foot building with a 1-foot cross on top? 1,500 more people at 2 people per car is 750 more cars per event. At 3 people per car, that number is 500 more cars per event. That level of activity in a neighborhood kind of boggles the mind. They are also discussing making the former Taez property into parking for 350 cars. My ninth grade math teacher, Mrs. Stevens, would say, go back and figure it again. On Saturday, March 30th, they held their annual Easter egg hunt. Many people attended for several hours. Of note were over 50 cars parked in the right-of-way off and on during the event along Calle Buena Vista, even though the church professes to have, quote, enough parking. Of course, if you use all of Pima County for your organization's parking, you will have enough. Additionally, working in my concrete block and insulated garage located 500 feet from the music source, I was able to enjoy the entire event due to volume. Does anybody see what's going on here? Oh, one last thought. Experience is what you get right after you need it. Thank you.
I have no other blue cards. We'll close call to audience and proceed with presentations. Mr. Standish, item one.
Presentation and update by Amphitheater School District Superintendent Todd Yeager, J.D.
Okay. Welcome, Superintendent Yeager.
Thank you, Mr.
Mayor. This evening, we look forward to your report.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, Council members, Mr. Manager. Good evening, and thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. We often look forward each year to the presentation from your council to our governing board, and this is kind of returning the favor. And we appreciate the opportunity. I'm going to start with just some quick facts about our district. It is actually our 130th year of existence. It's our 130th anniversary. We were a school district before Arizona was a state. It was still a territory. We can go ahead and advance the slide, or can I do that here? Very good. So at 50 years, we kind of look on Orvalley as a young pup. But we're very proud, actually, to have been a part of Orvalley from its very start. We look forward to joining in your parade celebration this weekend, in fact. We currently enroll 12,000 students. It varies up and down through the year, but that's generally where we currently are. We serve those students in 22 schools across the greater Tucson community. We start all the way down at Grant Road and go all the way up to the county line. Of our 22 schools, 10 of those serve the Orvalley community under its boundaries, current boundaries. So in doing so, we rely upon the services and dedication of some 2,000 employees across our district, across those many sites. And one of the things we're most proud of is that regardless of, or perhaps given various factors that affect school district performance generally across the state, across the country, our school district as a whole outperforms its peer districts as well as the state average district in terms of our student performance measures. So we're very proud of that. We have full system-wide accreditation on a national level from Cognia, which is a national accreditation entity that evaluates school district performance factors, outcome measures, finances, just wall-to-wall types of issues. And we've had that certification for many years, actually. We have a great many programs in our district as a comprehensive K-12, now pre-K-12 school district should. But some of the programs that we have include, for example, our all-day kindergarten. Okay, the state of Arizona does not provide funding for all-day kindergarten. We receive half-day funding for kindergarten, but thanks to the support of our local voters through an override ballot measure that was passed about 5 years ago, we now have all-day K back in our schools. And I say back because the state of Arizona at one time did provide the funding for all-day K, then took that funding back. So we have, through the goodness of our shared taxpayers, made that possible again. We also have STEM programming throughout our entire district that includes, among other things, specific and dedicated maker spaces in every single school. We're expanding that in some sites as well. We have 20 career and technical education programs that run the gamut from biomedical sciences to welding, carpentry, and the like. We have, of course, some very successful interscholastic sports programs, notably with some state champions right here in Orvalley with our Ironwood Ridge Boys Golf Team this year, our CDO Boys Swim Team, CDO Wrestling, and, of course, CDO Football, which took the state championship this year as well. Unlike a great many districts in our state and even across the country, we also offer art, music, and PE programs. Lots of schools have art, music, and PE, but they may not be provided, as ours is, by fully certificated and specialized teachers in those particular content areas. And we ensure that every student has art, music, and PE provided by those specialized teachers each and every week. Again, that's something that we are able to do through the support of our local taxpayers as well. We have, of course, a very rigorous advanced placement program, which we coordinate with the College Board, the National College Board. We have dual enrollment opportunities, and a great many of our students now are graduating from high school with several, or sometimes many, in fact, college credits under their belt, which of course makes the college experience for them hopefully shorter, less expensive. And we're very proud that we've expanded that in the last several years. We have a couple of special advanced programs that we offer at two of our schools. The first of those being the International Baccalaureate Program, which is offered at Canyon Del Oro High School, and then, of course, the Cambridge Academy Program, which is offered at Amphi High School. We now, following a rigorous acquisition process over the last few years, during COVID notably, we now have more than one computer device for every student. So we have the ability to assign a computer to every child that they can take home, that they can use at school, et cetera. We're becoming less and less reliant upon hard textbooks and making that content, that curricula, more readily available and a lot easier on the backpack shoulder. We are very proud of our exceptional education programming, both for our special needs students, that is students with disabilities of one form or another, or students who have special acuities and special talents, the gifted populations. Sometimes they are one and the same, and those are our duly exceptional students. We now have, following a lot of changes in the demography of public education in Arizona with the onset of charter schools and what often ends up being a sort of a concentration in public schools of special needs students, we now have about 19% of our students receiving services for disabilities. When I joined the district some 30 years ago, we were at about 8%. And so that's a significant increase. It's not necessarily, however, attributable to birth rate cohort issues or anything like that. It is, in fact, that when these students are not enrolled in charter schools for one reason or another, the concentration in public schools grows. So we also most recently have dramatically expanded our preschool programs. This is, again, an area that we receive no funding from the state for, with the exception of the limited number of preschool programs that exist to serve exclusively special needs students between birth and kindergarten age. Now, we have more preschool programs than any other school district in Pima County. And we have that in large part due to the support of our other partners in the community, including this very council. We were asked some, about 2 years ago, 3 years ago maybe now, we were asked by Pima County initially to develop some preschool programs that they would underwrite the cost of creating physically, the classroom spaces, the equipment that was necessary, and the like, and then some funding to support the operation of those programs as well. We initially wanted to open six, and they said, well, we're going to just do three. And so we'll give you funding for three because we've got to spread the funding around. We opened our three. The other districts actually did not, and so the county came back to us and said, how many more would you like? If you can get them open, we'll fund them. We said, okay, give us the other three. And they said, how about we give you six? So we began with a total of nine. And then ultimately, more recently, and again, thanks to this council, we were able to open four preschool programs here in Oro Valley specifically. Because, again, lacking any state resources whatsoever to equip those classrooms and properties, we needed the support of other agencies. And the town stepped up, and we are eternally grateful for it, with $100,000 that enabled us to build a preschool playground at Ironwood Ridge High School. Yes, the high school. Okay, we've got little guys running around. And then the bigger kids behave more appropriately as a result, which is a good thing. We built and expanded a playground area at CDO, created a STEAM room, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, at CDO for those little guys. And then also we expanded our preschool classroom that was already there at CDO, which you may also know is a CTE classroom. The students, the high school students who work in that classroom are actually part of a CTE program on early childhood development, and they learn how to operate the business of a child care facility as well as provide instruction to those students. It's a wonderful program, and I hope at any point that you might want to go take a look at these programs that you will give me a call, and I will be more than happy to take any one of you or more of you to go see that. We also needed to remodel existing restroom facilities because the little guys need little facilities. And so that was also supported through the town's contribution. So again, cannot thank you enough. Here's some of what you did. This is the new preschool playground at Ironwood Ridge High School. Thanks to you, those little guys have some really wonderful equipment to play on that is fully certified and licensed by the state of Arizona. And here is the new play area at CDO, again, thanks to you, as well as the STEAM room that I mentioned there as well. So I also have to, as I often do with the chief herself, thank you. And say thank you yet one more time for our incredible school resource officers. We have the unique perspective of being a school district that lies across several jurisdictions. Unincorporated Pima County, fully incorporated City of Tucson, of course, and then the town, right? It is a fairly unique experience we have here in the town in terms of the level of SRO support, and also the relationship that we have with the SRO program and the police department itself here in Oro Valley. We've been in the situation where, in fact, just a couple of years ago, where the only jurisdiction that was supporting its community through the presence of SROs in the community schools was Oro Valley. We're recovering a little bit from that in Pima County. We still have quite a distance to go in the city. And so we are very mindful of what that difference makes here in Oro Valley and in those Oro Valley schools, because we are constantly reminded of that difference in a variety of ways, including the relationships that we see formed between our officers and these children, the impact they have on behavior, and certainly the presence or lack thereof of crime on our school campuses, and then certainly the role that our officers play in making better citizens of our youngest citizens. So I have to say thank you again for that remarkable contribution that we are always very aware of. This is our portrait of a graduate. This is, for lack of a better phrase, this is a visual representation of our mission. We certainly teach the three R's or four R's, as they say. But beyond that, we believe that it is our absolute responsibility that when every student leaves our district in high school with that diploma in hand, that they also have some skills in hand and in mind and in heart, actually, that will enable them to be the most productive citizens that they can possibly be. This is a visual representation, a mission statement, again, if you will, that we arrived at after a very broad and comprehensive community process by which we asked business leaders, parents, students themselves, constituents of one kind or another, to tell us what skills students should have, the so-called soft skills you often hear about. And those include things like being a critical thinker, being able to collaborate with people, whether in your community or in the workplace, perhaps in higher education and the like. Also, creative thinking, being able to think outside the box and come up with unique solutions when problems present themselves. Obviously, academic content should be a given, and so we want our students to be well-grounded in those four R's. We also have included the ability to communicate, the willingness and the evidence of caring for your community, and then being a good citizen and being equipped to perform as a citizen should, and then finally being a problem solver in general. And so that is an emphasis we have throughout our district. We are moving towards personalized learning that draws out each of these soft skills in a great many ways. And we do so notwithstanding a great many challenges that we are facing. And I say that not just with respect to amphitheater, but public education in our state in general. We have had tremendous budget cuts in our state. And sometimes we hear that, but we don't understand the scope of it. For more than 10 years, we had our capital budgets alone, just the budgets that pay for air conditioners, textbooks, and computers, and buildings, and carpet, and the like, the fixed hard assets. We had those cut by the state by 90%. 90%. We're just getting that funding back. We were fortunate in amphitheater that we could buffer that to some degree by our local bonds that our voters approved. And we're not in a huge class of districts to be able to say that. There are a great many districts who suffered through those 90% cuts without any of that local support. In addition, everyone should understand that our state has failed to even keep pace with inflation for many years, decades worth of years, actually. And so we're kind of behind the eight ball in terms of a great many things, including our ability to provide sometimes even the barest of necessities in some respects for some of our programs. Case in point, our preschools that you helped us with. But also just trying to catch up from where we were. But most certainly one of the areas that we have to grapple with here in Arizona is the difficulties we have as a state in recruiting staff to our state, whether that's school bus drivers or competent and qualified, highly certificated teachers. It is very hard for school districts to compete, number one, with districts in other states, but even for staff that might be also hired by the private sector. So another issue that we continue to face, largely because of growth issues in the state, is what's called the aggregate expenditure limit. That's part of our state constitution that actually limits how much school districts can spend. This last year, the legislature issued a budget, set our budget. We were going to receive additional funds beyond what we'd received the year before, but they had to go the extra step of waiving the constitutional expenditure limit, because otherwise we wouldn't have been able to spend as a collective state about $1.6 billion in education funding. So we are, again, that's another indicator of how behind the times we are as a state in terms of keeping up with the pace of inflation relative to education spending in general. That's why Education Law Center, yes, a national sort of think tank, if you will, it's nonpartisan, has again given Arizona an F related to its per pupil funding. As a state, from all sources, this includes local bond funds, what have you, we spend about $10,000 per student. And that's not what the state is spending itself. That's what the state and individual districts on an aggregate level are spending per student. Now, understand that it's far less than that for a great many individual districts. The national average, however, is about $16,000. We are considerably, obviously, below that. We rank 50 out of 51, because they include D.C., in that respect, in terms of our spending. One of the things they did more recently, this law center, was to examine how the funding effort in each state compared to pre-recession, the Great Recession of 2008. And one of the things they look at specifically is how did education funding sort of correspond with or mirror or not the gross domestic product of an individual state. And again, you see that we received an F in that respect. What we know is that for the last several years, since 2008, in fact, great many years, we've seen our state GDP raised by about 11%. During that same period of time, our funding of education dropped by 28%. And if we were to have kept our level of funding consistent with where it was prior to 2008, school districts would have about 64% more in their budgets totally at this point. But that's how far off we've been, how far behind we've gone. So we lost a total of $18 billion in education funding below our 2008 level that we still have yet to recover from. Now, obviously, one of the things that becomes very important when you are short on revenue is becoming as efficient as possible. And we are a transparent district. I'm here to tell you the facts. And here's where we stand in a number of respects. You will often hear critics of public education go on about the high cost of administration in public education specifically. And it is a red herring, often. But it is most certainly a red herring in Arizona. Arizona districts, on average, have the lowest administrative costs of any state in the union. And among Arizona districts, we have among the lowest as well. Right now, we're running very comparable because some of our expenses are up following ESSER and are following COVID and the federal funds. Our recovery efforts there. But generally speaking, you can see that we're running right about our peer average in terms of our administrative costs. Those will start to drop again. We used to be very, very low in that respect. Our plant operations, one of the things that's interesting about our plant operations is that while our costs are relatively stable, we have much larger schools than most districts. And that is particularly true here in the Oro Valley schools. If you'll visit a school like Wilson, Coronado, certainly Copper Creek, those schools are large. And one of the things that does is it drives up your square footage per student. And that's one of the cost factors that's looked at here. But we're holding steady there. One of the things we're very proud of is that we have very low student meal costs, among the lowest in the state. But our transportation is extraordinarily high. And there's a couple reasons for that. First of all, we're spread out. And we have to do a lot of driving. Okay, our schools are spread out. We cover 110 square miles as a school district. And so we do a lot of driving, first of all. We are also, more recently, dependent upon third-party contractors to meet our driving needs because we simply cannot find school bus drivers. It's a national issue, certainly a local one, because we're competing for the very same people that Amazon needs to drive its vans and trucks and whatnot. So we have some real difficulties there, and the costs are higher as a consequence when we have to contract that out. And then finally, just the cost of fuel and the like that tends to be equivalent for most districts. So just want to share with you kind of like what we're working on in terms of improving our efficiencies. We are going to be doing a lot of work in terms of changing the way we transport, the specific systems we use, protocols and the like. And hopefully you see a fewer big buses on the road, some smaller buses that enable us to use different staff and the like to get the job done. So we're working on that. The other thing I want you to be aware of, because again, there's a lot of misinformation out there, is how things look in terms of teacher compensation. Okay? We do our very best to be as competitive as possible. And what I've given you here is the average teacher pay in the state of Arizona, which is driven up considerably by school districts in Maricopa County, which have the benefit of student enrollment growth. They're really the only county that's growing. And what that does is it puts a great deal, it accelerates the funding for those districts, and they are able to compete more effectively in terms of salary because they have more funds. And then you have some districts that have specialized and pretty extraordinary in terms of amount federal funds that we may not qualify for. Sunnyside School District, for example, you can see tops the list there. And that's because they receive a great deal more in Title I and other low-income population funding that benefits them in this and other respects. Cat Foothills, slightly higher than us, they have the benefit of receiving a few thousand dollars per teacher from their foundation every year, which is a very successful foundation. They do very good in fundraising from direct contributions from their constituents. And you see also Flowing Wells and Tucson Unified, both of which also have those significantly more in those federal funds than we receive. But additionally, Tucson Unified receives about two-thirds of our entire budget in desegregation funds alone that come from all of us all over the state, that they can, some $63 million worth, that they can put towards these tasks. But you can see that we run ahead of many other districts in our local community. In fact, districts that are more on par with us in terms of our socioeconomics, the populations we serve, and also our community economics. So we are proud that you're going to see this number going up considerably next year as well. Amphitheater will be much more competitive than we are even right now. The other thing I just want to mention is that the state of Arizona does measure school-wide performance in each and every school. That's with respect to just public and public charter schools. They do not measure private school performance in any measure whatsoever. There's several parts of the formula that go into the assessment of each individual school that ultimately results in a label, a grade label, actually, that is also defined as performing or highly performing, excelling, and the like. So last time I spoke to you was just a day or two before, and we were embargoed. We were not allowed to release that we knew at that point in time that every school in Oro Valley was going to receive an A and would be an excelling school based on the performance measures just a year ago. And I stood here and I said, watch for some good news about Oro Valley schools. And that's what it was, of course. So all 10 of those schools received that A label. Since the time I became superintendent about 7 years ago, we have increased our A schools by 500%. And it's something we continue to work on. We had a couple schools just fall just slightly on some things this year in Oro Valley, just frankly, that shouldn't have happened. And they're very simple things to fix, so we expect to see a rebound here. This is, of course, largely based on one measure. So there's several measures in there, but the most significant is the statewide assessment that's conducted at several grade levels. And one of the faults in that is that, you know, you have kids taking a test on one day, maybe in a given year, right? And depending on the performance of kids that one day, you could have great experience or you could have a negative experience. It also depends upon whether the test has been out very long. In other words, last year we got a brand new test that dramatically impacted statewide performance measures because the curricula had yet to catch up with things, et cetera, et cetera. New things were being tested that weren't tested before and the like. So my point being that, you know, any single system of assessment that's based largely on one measure is not a sound system. But it is nonetheless what we have in Arizona. And so it is important that when it captures the public attention, is my school an A, is my school a C, what have you, it is important that we be responsive and that we do our best to make the grade, as it were, just as we ask the same of our students. So it's a work in progress. I expect fully that we're moving the needle as we have over the last 7 years. We're going to move the needle even more, not just in Oro Valley, by the way. We've moved the needle considerably across our district. So we're going to keep at it. So I thank you for this opportunity to present to you. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Superintendent. We appreciate your presentation this evening and, of course, your leadership with the Amphitheater Public Schools. Well, council questions? Councilmember Green?
That was an excellent presentation. Thank you so much. What's the impact of the incoming non-English speaking students on our system? How are we coping with that?
Thank you, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, Councilmember Green. We have a significant population throughout our district, but often at certain schools that have a very diverse array of language skills and knowledge with respect to the English language. At one of our schools, Prince Elementary, as an example, about 3 years ago, when we counted, there were 68 different languages spoken by those students. Sometimes they come from refugee agencies. Sometimes they come to us through immigration of one form or another. And it is incumbent upon us to rise to the challenge and meet their needs, teach them English. The law, state law in Arizona, constrains us in how we go about doing that. That's changed in recent years. And that's a struggle. It's a struggle both in terms of getting students to a level of proficiency as quickly as possible. It's also a struggle in terms of finding the teachers who are well qualified to do just that. But certainly the diversity itself is a struggle. Not just with respect to the instruction of the students, but also to meeting the needs of the families. Because we have to ensure that those families have access to every aspect of our programs and services. In other words, if they're coming to a parent conference, they have to be able to receive information and understand what we're saying in a language that meets their needs, right? So it is a big issue for us. Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you for your presentation. Having raised my kids here and raising my kids here, we've benefited from a lot of really dedicated educators from the Amphitheater School District. So we really appreciate that. I have a question about potential future bond funding. I've heard rumors about potential aquatic centers or other things like that. Can you address what, if any, plans you have moving forward?
Certainly, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett. We have plans to propose to our governing board, and so it's far from settled that we will have a bond election, but we do have plans to propose to our governing board this November, a new bond. all of some of the things I already mentioned would be supported by a new bond. New air conditioners, computers, school buses, all the typical things. But then we also are in the process of determining the special projects, the needed projects that we might have. One of the considerations was whether we might put a pool at Ironwood Ridge, because we, of course, have the benefit of the pool adjacent to Canyon Del Oro. We have a pool on site at Amphi High School. Ironwood Ridge is the only school that lacks a pool, and we certainly know that recreationally in our community, we think we would benefit from another pool. Our problem is that we can't operate a pool publicly for public purposes. We depend upon the city of Tucson to run the pool that is on our property that we own technically, to operate that for the use of Tucson Parks and Rec. And obviously the town's aquatic center adjacent to the school we make use of, but that is the town's to operate. So that's one of the considerations we're looking at, is as badly as we might need another facility at Ironwood Ridge, from an aquatic perspective, we would obviously want the public to be able to take advantage of a facility that is that much of an investment, but we don't have the capacity to run a pool. In fact, we really can't legally. So we would have to have the support of another agency to do that. Now, there are a great many other plans and ideas. That's but one of them, and I know that's kind of picked up a little, you know, attention, but we want to make other improvements to our facilities that potentially could benefit the public more broadly, such as improved athletic facilities, and then certainly a lot of programmatic improvements, academic in nature. So.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I understand it's just in the early thought phases. So thank you for answering my question. My next one is kind of related to that. It's about fields. When I first moved here 15 years ago now, we didn't have fields at Naranja Park or anything like that. And my kids played soccer and Little League on the school fields. So we met at Painted Sky to play soccer. We met at Copper Creek to practice Little League. And then we'd, you know, go elsewhere for games or things like that. But now it kind of feels like there isn't that practice or school, you know, there isn't that community accessibility to practice on the fields. So I'm wondering, you know, if maybe we could work together moving forward on some of those initiatives, and also if we could seed the fields for the winter so that the kids can have grass when they're actually in school.
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, council members, thank you for the question, because it gives me an opportunity to kind of refute some of the misinformation that's there. We have not changed at all our openness, and in fact, our office that serves the community by making our fields available. We still have a schedule. What has happened is that there's been a growth in our community. There are more kids. There are more organizations that need facilities, and we're frankly at our limit. There are only so many hours in the day to use a field. Our fields are used at virtually every site every year. We do have to rest the fields for periods. That is required by the nature of our grass here in Arizona. And so we are, you know, kind of taxed to the limit. Our organizations that we've had relationships for, that use our fields, we've had relationships for years and years and years. Sometimes those organizations, you know, want to acquire use of more field time, and that's to the detriment potentially of other organizations that are also using the field. And so sometimes there's this concept that because one team or one organization has been told, no, we can't expand your use, that somehow we've curtailed the use of fields altogether, when in point of fact it's because another organization that is also using the field continues to use the field. In terms of the winter rye issue, there again, there's some competing issues. When you plant winter rye, you have to stay off the fields and let that take hold. That might be in the middle of sports season that one of our teams, that our, one of our schools has its teams competing through, and so we're maybe not able to do that. More significantly right now, particularly given the funding constraints we have, we do not have the finances to water fields for winter rye throughout the year, throughout the winter. We simply do not have that. That costs at a given school site, with when you do that across all the fields, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars at even just one site. So it's a considerable expense, and we can't bear that because we receive no funding for public recreation purposes, right? We barely receive sufficient funding, as I've noted, just to meet our academic and athletic, internal athletic program needs. So we are, you know, we've had conversations with the town specifically about how we might partner on those things, but it would be, it would take a real partnership to make that happen.
Yeah, I just meant even for the school kids, because I know winter season is when they're mostly in school, and so they would love to be able to play on some grass, you know, on those fields, just even the school kids, not just athletics. But okay, and then my final question or thought is, I know that you do a good job partnering with our SROs in terms of helping the schools to be as free as possible of drugs and vaping and mm-hmm. bullying. And so I just kind of would ask that, you know, you continue to work on that partnership and helping hold everyone accountable from the district perspective as much as we're trying to do from the town perspective. And kind of on a related note, I don't know if there are any plans moving forward, but just trying to get the restrooms at the high schools open so that the kids can use the restrooms without fear and things like that. So I just kind of feel like, you know, us continuing with our SROs and law enforcement and everything that we can do in the community and with the district, just continuing to partner towards having the schools be safe and have open restrooms and all of that. Thanks.
Thank you for the question, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, because that is, again, an area that we certainly know we need to do better on. That's actually part of, again, one of our bond hopes, is that, again, not receiving state funding for the same, that we can use what will be probably several millions in funding from our bonds to equip our schools with security cameras. That not inside a bathroom, for obvious reasons, but outside a bathroom can keep sight on who's going in and out. And therefore, when we have vandalism occurring or when we have an incident occurring, we know exactly who was in that bathroom at that time. Should alleviate a lot of the issues that ultimately lead schools in desperation to lock this bathroom or that bathroom and then concentrate student use on just certain bathrooms that they can supervise more effectively with live staff. So so those are things we're actually working on.
Great, thank you. And I appreciate your work on those things. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Councilmember Bond.
Thank you very much for all the information that you shared with us. I kind of locked in on one thing. Good news you presented about all-day kindergarten. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good thing for working parents. Can you share with us, is that indefinitely that we're funded right now, or will the funding sunset at some point?
Thank you again for that question, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, and Councilmember Bowen. We do see a sunset on that funding. In fact, again, this November, we must potentially ask our governing board members to allow us to go back to our public and ask them to continue what is called override funding. That's where In very limited circumstances, you can go to your public and say, over and above the funding that we get from the state, will you agree to increase our local funding for education by a certain percentage? You can go up to 15% depending upon the programs. We currently have a 3.5% override that is in place specifically for kindergarten through third grade programs. That, number one, has dramatically cut our class sizes from K-3 by as much as 8 students per classroom, but also provides the funding for that all-day K. Okay? And so we need to renew that potentially in November to keep that going. So very timely question.
Thank you very much.
Any additional questions? Superintendent Jaeger, thank you again for being here this evening. We appreciate all that you do and the staff and teachers for the students of the town of Oral Valley and the surrounding areas. Our family moved here in 1996. One of the reasons that we chose to live in Oral Valley was because of Amphitheater Public Schools. Our children graduated from CDO, Ironwood, attended Copper Creek, Painted Sky, and Coronado. So,
thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
They're successful parents and people of their community, so thank you.
Good. Appreciate it. Thank you all.
Mr. Standish, we'll go to item 2 of presentations.
Proclamation, Week of the Young Child.
Thank you. I'll read the proclamation. Week of the Young Child, April 6th through the 12th, 2024, whereas the first years of a child's life are the period of the most rapid brain growth development and lay the foundation for all future learning, and whereas high-quality early childhood education depends on high-quality early childhood educators who ensure that children supported by families have the early experiences they need for a strong foundation, and whereas young children need skilled, educated, competent, consistent, and compensated early childhood educators, early childhood educators need the ability to earn a family-sustaining wage that is commensurate with the required education and skills they bring to the complex and valuable work they do, and whereas working families need robust subsidies, scholarships, and tax credits for families at all income levels that support the true cost of quality early childhood education. And whereas First Things First, Arizona Association for the Education of Young Children, Southern Arizona Association for the Education of Young Children, and other community organizations, in conjunction with the National Association for the Education of Young Children, are celebrating the 53rd anniversary of the Week of the Young Child. Now, therefore, I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of the Town of Oral Valley, do hereby proclaim the week of April 6th through the 12th, 2024, as the Week of the Young Child in the Town of Oral Valley, and urge all members of our community to support efforts that increase children and families' access to high-quality early childhood education. So certainly a timely proclamation, given Superintendent Jaeger's visit this evening. We also have Community Engagement Coordinator for First Things First, Ms. Gina Garza, who will accept this proclamation. Test.
Thank you, Mayor Winfield, and thank you to the council for affording this time in your meeting to shed light on the importance of young children and their needs. Here in Pima County, 25% of children under the age of 5 live in poverty, and 90% of their brains develop before the age of 5. So if you're wanting to have a community full of adults who have those executive function skills that Superintendent Jaeger listed that we want to see in graduates, you need to invest early on and ensure that you're laying that foundation. And that is very clear that the town of Oro Valley is doing that. So thank you so much.
Ms. Garza. Instead of going back to the dais, we have a second proclamation. Mr. Standish, item three.
Proclamation, National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week.
Thank you. So this is National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week. Whereas emergencies can occur at any time that require police, fire, or emergency medical services, and whereas when an emergency occurs, the prompt response of police officers, firefighters, and paramedics is critical to the protection of life and preservation of property, and whereas the safety of our police officers and firefighters is dependent upon the quality and accuracy of information obtained from citizens who telephone the Town of Oro Valley Emergency Communications Center, and whereas public safety telecommunicators are the first and most critical contact our citizens have with emergency services, and whereas public safety telecommunicators are the single vital link for our police officers and firefighters by monitoring their activities by radio, providing them information, and ensuring their safety, and whereas the public safety telecommunicators of the Oro Valley Police Department have contributed substantially to the apprehension of criminals, suppression of fires, and treatment of patients, and whereas each telecommunicator has exhibited compassion, understanding, and professionalism during the performance of their job in the past year, now therefore I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of the Town of Oro Valley, do hereby proclaim the week of April 14th through the 20th, 2024, to be National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week in the Town of Oro Valley in honor of the essential men and women whose diligence and professionalism keep our town emergency responders and citizens safe. And I'd like to invite Police Department Dispatch Supervisor Mr. Ben Johnson, who will accept this proclamation.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Madam Vice Mayor, Town Council, and Town staff. I think it's really important every year that to recognize the work of our public safety telecommunicators, the first responders for any emergency. We are definitely that link between the problem in front of you and getting you a fire truck or a cop car to help solve that issue. I always remind people, think about any news story you see, whether it's a swift water rescue in Catalina, whether it's officers responding to a traffic accident or shoplifting incidents. There is a call taker behind there answering the first 911 call from victims and witnesses on scene, and there are radio dispatchers keeping track of officers, keeping track of firefighters, making sure that they come home safe at the end of the night. So on behalf of our Emergency Communications Center Manager, Michelle, myself and Kelly, the two supervisors, and the main stars, the frontline dispatchers who answer the calls every day, that is Matt, Jen, Mickey, Paige, Zach, Lindsay, Morgan, McKenna, Courtney, Corey, and Sarah. Thank you very much for this honor. We are very proud to serve this community and appreciate the support from not only Town Council and staff, Chief Riley, her command staff. This is a great community to work for, so thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll go to the consent agenda. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Mr. Mayor, I request to ask some questions on item one, the minutes.
Okay. So we'll pull item one, the minutes. So I move to approve item B and C of the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 6-6. Councilmember Bowen, item A.
Yes, I have a question for the town attorney. When I read the minutes for the previous meeting, in particular relating to item one that's coming up tonight, I see both a 7-0 approval in the minutes, but I also see a motion to continue. And so are we approved or are we continuing?
You are not approved because prior, after that motion was called,
there were blue cards to the audience that were red that caused there to be a defect in the first motion. The second motion was then to ratify that motion, and that motion was then continued. So based on that continuance, it acts as a continuance on the matter.
So is the text in the minutes that says approved 7-0, is that correct or should it be stricken?
It's correct in that it reflects that there was a motion that was passed 7-0. That motion was then reconsidered for ratification, and that ratification was continued to tonight, keeping the matter alive. So it should reflect that there was a motion that went through, and then it should reflect also that there was a second motion to ratify that motion that was then continued to tonight.
And the reason why I think this is germane, this regular agenda item's coming up, is that that motion was pretty specific that we approved 7-0 regarding items that we approved to fund. And I believe the staff has brought forward some new proposals and some new costs to us. So, I mean, how do we handle that if we choose to do something different than we did 2 weeks ago with respect to that motion?
In order for the town to take action, that original motion needs to be ratified in some way. Until that motion's ratified and there's action taken, the town can revise that motion in any way it wishes so that the town can have clear direction based off the council's authority on how to act.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Those were my questions.
Vice Mayor.
On a related note, do we need a motion to reconsider? Like, what about the 7-0 motion created the need to ratify?
There was a procedural defect prior to the 7-0 motion. So I don't think you need a motion to reconsider. I think you have to finish the ratification motion. So you have to ratify. Essentially what you'd have to do if you want to change the motion, which I think goes back to Councilmember Bowen's earlier question, is you have to reject the motion to ratify that has been continued, propose a new motion as to what actions you want the town to take this evening.
Thank you.
Okay, so I move to approve item A of the consent agenda.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Nicholson. Any additional discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 6-0. We'll go to regular agenda item 1, Mr. Standish.
Requesting funding for the creation of an alternative golf route at Push Ridge Golf Course along hole number 7.
Our town engineer and public works director, Mr. Kiesler, will present this item. Welcome, Mr. Kiesler.
Thank you, Mayor. Council, I'm really going to just address the question that was posed at the last meeting, and that was, is there an ability, or what would the cost be, to either do a bridge that's a pedestrian-only bridge, or a bridge that's a pedestrian and a golf cart combination bridge? The key factor here is loading, and actually the critical load is if it were pedestrian only. So whether it's pedestrian only or pedestrian cart, the cart actually carries less load than the code mandated 60 pounds per square foot for a pedestrian walkway. So the cost of that, as was meant in the amended agenda, is $390,000, and that is off of a proposal from a contractor. And that includes removal of the old bridge and the construction of a new bridge in its place that is code compliant. So there's the original suggestion from staff with regard to creation of the path, and now we have the cost for this to create the bridge. So, Council, I leave that to your pleasure.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Kiesler. I do have a couple blue cards that I'd like to have take at this time before we deliberate further. So when you come forward, when your name is called, if you'd please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. Dan Talsma.
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, members of council, good evening. Thanks for the chance to talk with you this evening. You have in front of you an array of options. I think all of them are workable, useful alternatives to restore the Pusch Ridge Golf Course to its full functionality. Please choose one and move forward with alacrity so that in the fall, the golf course can be open and people can enjoy it to its fullest. Thank you very much.
Scott Hunt.
Good evening. I'm Scott Hunt. I feel like I know you because I've been speaking on this topic for a bit. Thank you very much for letting me speak to you about this issue. I really do appreciate it. I think it reflects so well on the town of Oro Valley that you've permitted so much discourse on this topic. Thank you, truly. So a couple things.
Mr. Hunt, could you just state whether you're a resident of Oro Valley?
Yes, I am a resident of Oro Valley. A couple of things that are, I believe, are relevant to this. There are, I believe, three options that are on the table right now. One of them was the option of a path that would replace the bridge for walkers and possibly golf carts as well. There were problems with that option, some of which I pointed out at your last meeting. But I think that you should probably still understand why these problems exist. And my suggestion to you would be to have someone make the walk that I described before. Someone who can put a backpack on his back with 20 pounds of weights in it and feel the difficulty that would be associated with that particular solution that has been proposed. It's really unacceptable for a walker to be able to do that. It's a very difficult and treacherous walk. So that's the first point. The second point is the bridge. And common sense tells me, having been over that bridge so many times and looked underneath it, that if the bridge does not currently meet code, it could be repaired. If you look at it, you can see that it could be repaired. This is not the bridge at San Luis Rey. This is not going to cascade into the wash underneath. It's largely intact. It has a few things that need fixed, but I think that repairing it represents a viable option, and I think one that would save the taxpayers in Oro Valley a bit of money. The third item is replacing the bridge, and a colleague of mine has sent to you as mayor, vice mayor, and the council members a proposal that mentions a prefabricated bridge that could be purchased for $50,000. Now, there are additional costs. The old bridge would have to be removed for that, but under any circumstance, the old bridge would have to be removed. Also, there would be costs to prepare the site. I don't know what that would be, $10,000, $20,000, maybe more. Third, there'd be the cost of transportation of this prefabricated bridge. So I just would ask that you consider this option. This one really makes sense to me. It will address the issues that you raised, Madam Vice Mayor, last time about having a bridge that would do two things, the pedestrians and the carts. You've gone so far on this with such good faith to come up with a good solution, and I think you're really close. I think some hands or some feet on the ground and some common sense would really go a long way to solving this problem. I thank you so much.
Thank you. Jerry Ward.
Thank you, Jerry Ward, 760 East Camino Diestro.
hole number two. I met with the mayor yesterday, and a lot of things have been happening since then and even before. I wasn't up on earlier city council meetings and all that and getting information from friends and all of that. I handed out to each council member sketch, and it's been revised since I saw the mayor yesterday, and we went over the three options you're considering. And myself, I'm an architect and used to, until we weren't allowed to, do engineering, structural engineering, and on projects as I did. And so I leave it up to my structural engineer now. And so I have that background. I also have a building background. I had a small construction company. And being from Portland, Oregon, and did a lot of projects in Washington, Oregon, we work with a lot of hillsides. And so the bridge is not something that disturbs me. It's something to be able to be fixed. So I have to admit that I come from this as this is a fixable thing if you look at it from saving money. And so I've been getting different numbers. I've heard 325,000, and what did we just hear from Paul? Maybe more now. I looked at the grade crossing, approximately 400 feet north, and it is approximately 80 feet from the west end of the existing bridge all the way down to the lowest portion of that grade crossing. And then you go up about 85 feet back up to the cart path by the hole that people try to reach. I've been going across this bridge since 1987, and I have not noticed any deflection. Even today, you put your eye on it, you put a laser on it, there's no deflection. It's a 40-foot span. At the 20-foot midpoint is the pier, and you can see it in the drawing I handed to you. And so I contacted my engineer in Portland the last few days and sent this kind of information and talked to him on the phone three or four times and going through it. For an engineer, by the way, I want to qualify. I don't want to put pressure on him. Oh, I'm sorry. Can I go on a little bit longer? Or?
Yes, Jerry, if you would just try to, be respectful of that.
I wrote too much here. I was out there measuring yesterday or today, and Paul showed up with the city deputy manager, I asked him what is disturbing, why is the city wanting to tear this down and do those other two options. And Paul cited the CSI report, and there's things in it that need to be attended to, but it's all repairable. Both the 3/16-inch plate, reviewed it with my structural engineer. The beam, by the way, he calculated today, that's one reason I'm late, is that he calculated that it's a W8x18 steel beam that's capable of supporting 12,000 pounds with the two together. Now, there's some intermediate things that need to be done. They're about a little under 7 feet across. Sorry. Okay. I'll just end it with saying this is very possibly repairable without a lot of cost. And I reviewed it with two contractors I work with, not down here, up there. And I reviewed it with a structural engineer just an hour ago. And they're talking about $50,000, depending on all the things that the city might come up with there, with your engineer, $50,000 to $100,000 to fix it, more like in the $50,000 range. So why not do that? And my thesis in my architectural degree was titled Make Do With What You Got. And I think the city should consider that versus spending, what is it, Paul just said, $390,000.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. Thank you
for bearing with me.
Of course. Mr. Kiesler, if you'd like to return to the podium, and we'll open it to questions from council. So one, I'll start out. In the CS or SCI report, it mentions as part of the conclusion recommendations, says, based on these conclusions, we recommend to remove the bridge from service and restrict user access, which the town has done. And then it does say, until structural repairs, strengthening, and or replacement components can be installed. So they're certainly suggesting in this SCI report that there are repairs that could be done so that the bridge is serviceable. Could you speak to that, Mr. Kiesler?
I can, Mr. Mayor. The issue is really from the ground up on the bridge. We have no idea what the abutments are. They look like a hodgepodge of concrete underneath those beams. The beams are, they seat on the abutments. The abutments carry the half of the bridge, essentially. There's no way to confirm whether those abutments are constructed in a fashion that's going to carry the weight. And again, if you leave the bridge as is at 7 feet, I can do that quick calculation here for you. It needs to carry
While Mr. Kiesler's doing that, Nick or Connor, is there some way to remove or to clean the screen? We've got the green.
No, yeah. So the bridge would need, as it stands today, the bridge would need to carry about 17,000 pounds to meet code. So there's no way for us to determine that those abutments are actually going to carry it. And on top of that, the center support, the pier, it's got major erosion around it as well. So you need to rebuild the pier. So if you need to rebuild the abutments and the pier, you got to yank the whole thing out. And it's a welded structure. It's rusted. You can see where they put stitch plates in there. It's just not something that I could certify that says, yes, this is going to carry the load, and it's going to carry the load per the code. Now, there is common sense. And really what we're dealing with here is, as a municipality, and my professional opinion, is that we need to provide a bridge that meets the code. And that's just something that you can't assure without actually tearing the whole thing down. But if you're going to tear the whole thing down, the cost of the new bridge out of that $390,000 was about $160,000. And I did see an earlier suggestion with regard to a $50,000 bridge, and that may be the cost of it, but it only carries about two-thirds of what the code load is. Okay. So it really boils down to just carrying the specified code.
Thank you, Mr. Kiesler. I'll open it up to other questions that council may have. Councilmember Bowen?
What I'd just like to start off with a comment. I read the report. You know, it's been implied that this bridge somehow wore out over 40 years. The report says there's inadequate elements of the design itself. The diamond plate, which the golf carts and the pedestrians walk over or drive over, is not thick enough.
That's correct.
So how did we not know that until literally we have people that are out there fixing this? How does the town not do an inspection, either at the time of the purchase of the course or at the time of the reopening of the course. You know, you had mentioned that Kimley Horn looked at it. Well, I've asked the town manager for the Kimley Horn report. Can you take us back for why you thought it was okay not to inspect it until you saw people actually working on it?
Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, the reason that we went out there, it's a multifaceted question. The reason that we went out there right now when we heard that work had been done is I was worried that drilling happened, that if the bridge was already, it stood for 40 years, if the bridge was already a compliant bridge and everything was okay, what my main concern was that this bridge might have been compromised by whatever repairs were being done. So I had to run out there and take a look at that. As we're out there and we're crawling around underneath the bridge, there's carts going across. And as the carts are going across, I can see the deflections and I can see the broken welds. At the time that we did our latest assessment, where we put together a proposal for a bridge in 2026, that's when we first were looking at this. And, you know, we have a 40-year-old bridge. It's met the service life. It's met its service life. So it's really time to do an analysis and really time to go ahead and decide whether or not the bridge meets spec and can remain. It can be repaired or it needs to be replaced. But from what I saw from that one inspection, as I saw carts going across, it was time to actually move that structural evaluation up to now. So that's why.
Did we follow up with SCI? I mean, throughout the report, they imply, yes, you know, you might not want to fix it at the price that we recommend or at the actions we recommend. Did we ever follow up with them what their actual recommendations are?
So we followed up. We were in constant communication with the structural engineer because the first indication the structural engineer gave us wasn't to close the bridge. They sent us a message and said, here's some things that you can do to the bridge to bolster it for right now. It wasn't until they did their actual calculations where we found that the bridge, the deck thickness was not thick enough, and that the beams don't carry the code mandated weight. So it was through that actual structural analysis that needed to be done. And again, we intended to do that structural analysis. It's just we pushed it up with what we saw in the field.
Okay. I think I read something a little bit differently than you just shared with us. I read a report signed off by an engineer. It says you have to close it unless you fix it. And what I'm concerned about is we never really followed up with them on what it would take to fix it, because I did a little bit of research myself. This is not a new problem. Golf courses need to span ravines, and there are ready-made solutions. This is, you know, $400,000 to me, that's the cost of a house to rebuild this very simple bridge. And, you know, we know a lot about what we need to do. So I'm very, very concerned about the costs that we're coming back with, and that we're not starting with the lower cost options and really ruling them out through a more thorough evaluation and just saying, let's just rebuild it. So I'm really concerned. I have a question for the town manager based on what one of the residents who came to speak to us said. Is the course open as of today?
Yes, the course is open. The 1 week when we did close, I think it might have been closed for half a day or so, we thought we were going to have to close two holes, if you recall. That was the communication. But I believe that very same day, Indigo had worked with staff to relocate some tees and was actually able to keep all nine holes open. Now, individuals that play the seventh hole do have to go down, I believe it's Shadow Place Drive down and come back up. So it's a little bit, it's definitely out of the way. You wouldn't want to walk that far. Taking the cart is still out of the way. But short answer, the nine holes are open.
And regarding the fact that we closed the course on March 5th and it's April 3rd, that's approximately a month's worth of data. How does the last month's worth of golf play compare with, say, March of last year or, you know, February or what have you? What do we know about how this has actually impacted results at the course?
I don't have those numbers ready at this point. We can get back with you, though.
I'd like to tell the public, I asked you that at the one-on-one, and that's very germane to what we're talking about tonight. You know, whether we advise to put capital into a course, it's impacted by, you know, how the customers are impacted by what's missing or what's less than ideal. So it would have been very nice tonight to know, you know, how did we do in March? What is it? The result, and how are we impacted versus the money we're going to spend? Those are my questions, Mr. Mayor.
Additional questions from council? Councilmember Solomon.
So, Mr. Kiesler, you had presented several options, and now some residents have presented other options. Do you still stand by your, I shouldn't say stand by, one of the recommendations was the alternative route. And if I recall, is that, in your opinion, now with the additional information, do you think still the lower cost, better alternative as opposed to repairing the bridge or replacing a bridge that will meet all the current required codes?
Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, I will refrain from making a judgment of which is the best. I will say it is easier for a walking player to utilize a route with a bridge in it. Although I walked the route myself, and it's a bit of a climb, but it's not much different than some of the other areas. So there are steep sections within that golf course. There are steep sections within our 36 holes. And a cart will be able to do it. A golf player who's walking it, sure, it will be more difficult to use the path option than it will be to use the bridge option. But I bet the path option is the less expensive of the two options between the path and the bridge solution. And again, I mentioned the bridge solution as a replacement solution, again, because there is no way that I can go ahead and confirm that it is going to be code compliant based on the abutment, based on the foundations. Let's call them for what they are, based on the foundations of what's out there.
Okay, and the bid you had for the bridge replacement was, I believe, you said $390,000?
The actual bid is $356,000, and that bid is good for 60 days. And I put a 10% contingency, just under 10%. Who knows what we're going to run into out there? They're going to have to place the crane on the eighth hole, and they're going to have to, as they dismantle the bridge, they'll have to cut the bridge apart. They'll have to pull it out with the crane. When they put the new bridge in, they'll assemble it in the field, and then they'll pick it up with the crane and set it in place. And also with the concrete pump trucks, too. They'll be all working off of hole eight.
And what about the comments we've heard actually 2 weeks ago and tonight that, no, it should be a $50,000 prefab bridge that we can get delivered here and installed and be up and running under $100,000?
If we have a contractor that would do that, I will sign that contract right here, right now. But that's not feasible. I don't mean to make jest of this, but there's a lot more cost involved here. Like I mentioned, in the $390,000, $160,000 of that is just the bridge alone. There's field fabrication, there's equipment rental, there's the concrete for the abutments because it does need to be replaced. Again, there's no way to assure that what's out there is going to carry the load that's required. So there's many facets to this. There's the design, there's going through the permitting process. Although we don't charge ourselves for the permit, there is the time involved for getting through that process because we'll have to do that analysis.
Okay, so summarizing, I mean, the information that we had last week, we were looking at 112,000 as far as the alternative BAP, removing the bridge, not utilizing. We had the paved alternative golf route of 112,000, replacement of the existing irrigation main, since we're going to be down there doing work and don't want to have to tear things up later, 65,000. And demolition and removal of the existing bridge, $80,000 for a total of $257,000. So it seemed like our main options are doing that work for $257,000 or spending $390,000 if we wanted to actually replace the bridge?
That's those are the two options I'm bringing forward.
Okay, thank you.
Vice Mayor?
Thank you. Do we know about how many people currently walk the course?
Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, I do not know that number.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, I believe, if I recall the numbers from the February, is about 1% of the golfers or golf rounds were walking, maybe 1.5, 1 to 1.5.
Okay, and a follow-up question to that, does that impact the disc golf issue at all, since those people would probably be walking?
In terms of the construction? Is that...
I'm thinking more in terms of whether you have to walk up a steep path or cross a bridge.
We can inquire with them, but I would venture to guess it's probably not.
Okay.
If I could, I don't recall... I don't recall a disc golf basket on hole 7. I mean, from that tee box. I mean, I'm just recalling from walking it, but not 100% sure. You know, of course, the baskets aren't on the greens, if you recall. They're mm-hmm. they're along the edges. Also, was giving it given information March rounds this year versus last year. 116 rounds. Decline this year. So we had 3,443 this March and 3,559 last March. So 116 rounds less this March.
Okay, thank you. I'm honestly not sure what I think is the best solution. I'm a little concerned just because when just February 2nd or something, this came to us to help us decide the future of the course. We were estimating, you know, $200,000 annually in capital over 10 years. And one of those costs was the bridge replacement. I think we knew that the bridge had to be repaired because, I mean, it was my perception that that's why the citizens went out and tried to fix it before the meeting, was because they were saying that's going to be a future capital cost. We think we can take care of that. So, I mean, I think we knew that this bridge would need addressing. And so I'm concerned about using basically two times the, you know, 1.5 or two times the annual capital costs all just a month after we decide to keep the course. And we also, when we decided to keep the course, had kind of said we're not going to do the irrigation. And that was one of the factors in the capital there. So, you know, I'm not entirely sure which solution I think is the best, and if there were a way to repair it economically, that would certainly be my preference. I am kind of curious just that the report implies that there's a way to repair it. I mean, I understand that we're saying there's not a way to repair it, but anyway, so I guess I don't know exactly, but I kind of think if we do the path, that we should not do the irrigation, because that was kind of something we had decided on. We're not going to do the irrigation. Thanks.
So I have Councilmember Nicholson and then Councilmember Solomon. I would like to, I think I, in the report, it basically says that, yes, there are some repairs that could be made, but it's framed that it's a short-term fix. So it does... They do recommend that the bridge should be replaced. And so these repair, you know, you can, what's short-term, long-term? That might be a question. But I don't think in the report they're suggesting that it can be repaired for the long-term, just for what that's worth. Councilmember Nicholson and then Councilmember Solomon.
Mr. Keyes, when you say abutments, are you talking about either end?
Yes, the concrete in which the bridge rests on either end. And then also the pier in the middle. That itself is also eroding.
And is there any way to do like you know, you sister or truss or something like that? If there's a crack and you put in two trusses on either side for 2x6, is there a way to sister it up, keep what we have, but support it with an additional pier and then maybe redoing the abutments or?
Well, and Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, I mean, there are always possibilities, but you at the end, when you get done rebuilding all of this, and it goes from the very bottom up to the very top, you can get out there and wiggle those handrails, and the whole bridge shimmies. That's not even close to code compliant. A handrail is supposed to be able to take without deflection a 200-pound load in any direction, essentially keeping things contained on the bridge. My opinion, it's not based on an estimate, but my opinion is by the time you pick the bridge out, you fix whatever foundation system that you need to make it work, you put the bridge back, you fix the bridge itself, you might as well have just bought a new bridge.
It's kind of like going to the movie theater and buying popcorn. Small popcorn's $5, large popcorn's $6. May as well spend the $6. Like $260,000 to make people walk, even if it is just 1%. The extra $140,000 to get the large popcorn might be worth it. Just, you know, you're going to be spending so much money in the first place. That's kind of how I feel, unfortunately, with it.
Mr. Mayor,
Councilmember Solomon. Okay, Mr. Wilkins, and then Councilmember Solomon.
Mr. Kiesler, as I recall, the decking of the bridge wasn't to code, and that caused some of the shimming that you saw from the. So there's no repair to the deck. The deck would have to be replaced.
You'd have to, yeah. So the Mr. Wilkins, the deck's welded to the girders. So you have to go in there and you have to try to cut that thing apart too, so that you're cutting it apart without damaging any of the other structural elements. And keep in mind, those other structural elements, the girders themselves, have been patched together. So there's a whole cadre of things going on with this bridge that makes it less than assured that you're going to be able to fix this thing and make it right. You're almost building something over it. And I don't know how you would be able to cut unless you could somehow slice off all of the decking. You have to come in with, you still have to fix the foundation, so you still have to pull the whole thing out before you can do anything. So that's, and really the cost difference here is that $160,000 less what steel you'd have to add to this and the time and the labor.
Councilmember Solomon and then Councilmember Bowen.
Pusch Ridge Golf Course is an enormous asset to the town. And just as a reminder, talking about inspections, when we purchased the golf course plus the two at El Conquistador plus the community center and 200 and something plus acres for $1 million at zero interest over multiple years. It was basically a gift to us. So this was not something that, talk about looking a gift horse in the mouth of saying, why didn't you inspect every single component of this $40 million asset that we were being given for $1 million with no interest. But it's also turning a profit. That's right. A profit is, golf is the only recreational use in this community that actually pays for itself. And in fact, the half cent sales tax meant to support the golf is now paying for a vast array of other recreational activities. So it makes sense to invest in this. This is the only asset we have that is actually providing funds that are now being used for other recreational facilities. So therefore, I'd like to make a motion that we approve funding an alternative golf pass to bypass the existing hole number 7 bridge for a total of $257,000. That includes $112,000 for construction of the paved alternative golf route, $65,000 to replace the existing irrigation main in the area that the work will be performed, and $80,000 for demolition and removal of the existing bridge.
Mr. Mayor, we're in a continued motion on the ratification, and until that motion is either passed through or defeated, Councilmember Solomon's motion is premature.
If I recall, it's actually the same motion that had already been approved. So what would be the procedure to get that finalized?
We're in the so there was a defect in the first motion. There was a motion to ratify through that defect in the first motion. Accordingly, we are still in the main motion of the first motion, which is the ratification of that motion. That motion needs to either be passed or defeated, it needs to be passed or defeated before a second motion can be proposed.
So should I just move that we ratify the original motion?
Move to ratify the original motion.
All right. I withdraw, and it wasn't seconded, so I move to ratify the motion.
Second. Councilmember Bowen.
Yes, Mr. Kiesler. In reading the report, one of the challenges that SCI had, for example, with respect to the abutments, was they had no documentation. They had no inspection reports. They didn't have a drawing. Have we asked for this drawing to try to see how this bridge was built in the first place?
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Bowen, we've asked for all the documentation with regard to all of the golf courses. We've been looking for that for years. We've received some, but most of it is non-existent. And I can say with a surety that this bridge, there isn't a document for that. I would have that by now. So I did not ask to answer you specifically. I did not ask for that bridge right now. But when we first got a hold of the golf course, we were given complete access to the Hilton archives, and we went ahead and we pulled everything that had to do with the golf course, and we don't have any plans on this bridge.
So even though that bridge is on town that the land that on land the town owns,
mm-hmm.
We know nothing about it.
We know nothing about the abutments. That is correct.
That's alarming. You know, in response to a previous comment that was made, things that can generate this much liability for us if they collapse are hardly a gift to the town. Rather, it's a constraint. It's a risk that we take in purchasing this course. So the fact that we somehow know where the irrigation is, incredibly enough, you know, we have documentation of that. We had documentation to do all of the irrigation on the other 36 holes. I mean, you knew where that stuff was. So why do we not know anything about this bridge? I mean, it should have been part of the design of the golf course, correct? Just like the irrigation system.
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Bowen, we don't know where the irrigation is in any of the courses. We know where all the surface pieces are. We know roughly when we repair breaks where those are, but there isn't a one comprehensive plan that shows where the irrigation is dimensionally on any of our golf courses. That is non-existent.
But didn't we spend $8 million to replace 36 holes of irrigation?
We did, and we know where all of that irrigation is. I have plans for that. But the original irrigation, the only place that we know where that is either where it breaks, where a head is, or where a valve is. That is the only thing that ties us to an understanding. I have an old, probably drawn in the 80s, rough pencil sketch of the 36 holes, and that's it.
So even after replacing at the cost of $8 million, we still have original elements in that system?
No. We replaced the whole system.
Well, this feels kind of circular. How did you find it, what to replace, unless you had some kind of documentation telling you where it was?
Councilmember Bowen, because we put in a whole new system. The whole new system is actually a completely separate system, separate and distinct from what the original was. So the original had no bearing on the design of the new system because this new system was a complete system.
But you would need to disconnect the original system, wouldn't you, in order to...
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, this is about funding for an alternate path. I don't think this item is appropriately agendized to go back and look at prior decisions about irrigation. So if we can try and keep the questions towards why this is germane to the request for funding for the path.
Okay. I will just say my questions are relative to documentation of town infrastructure that, you know, you're asking us to replace, and we don't even have a drawing. To me, a lot of the recommendations that SCI made, they might have been able to stand behind them had they had some documentation. It sounds, without a drawing, it looks to them just somebody dug some holes at both ends of the ravine, poured some cement, and made an abutment. But if there was a drawing or a document, there would be some evidence of what was actually there and whether it's suitable for, you know, moving on with a repair. That's all I'm getting at. It's kind of shocking to me that we've owned this for so long and we know so little about it. That's all. That's my comment, Mr. Mayor.
Vice Mayor Barrett and Councilmember Solomon.
Thank you. I'm going to vote against the motion to ratify because I would like to remove the irrigation, as I thought that was part of what we had discussed and what was brought forward when we decided to keep the Push Ridge Golf Course, or when the council did. So I'll just say that.
Okay.
And if the motion to ratify fails, then I would like to proceed with a motion that does the path and removes the irrigation.
Councilmember Solomon.
Two questions. When was that bridge built approximately?
Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, as far as I know, I don't know an exact year, but early 80s.
And was that under the jurisdiction of Oro Valley at the time or Pima County?
You know, it was right about the time that Oro Valley was annexing the Elkhorn area, the entire Elkhorn area.
And I'm assuming the contractor would have had to submit plans to either Oro Valley or Pima County for the bridge?
Back in the 80s, I can't make that. I can't go out on that limb.
All right, so original documentation of the bridge may have never been even submitted to the town, depending upon the codes at the time?
It'd be speculation for me to say one way or the other.
Well, if that was the case, then it wouldn't be very surprising why the town wouldn't have this documentation. Isn't that correct?
Well, we have Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Solomon, we do have, when it comes to much of private development, we have document lifespan. So documents do get destroyed. I'd have to refer you to the clerk as to what the time frame is for that document retention. But there is a destruction schedule based on the life of a document.
Right. That's my only point is that, you know, when you're talking about something built in 87, it was a paper document, just like building plans submitted in 87 or 88. And the homeowner says, hey, I'd like the town to give me the plans to my house that was built in 1988. Where are they? And the town says, sorry, those blueprints were destroyed a long time ago because it was built, inspected, approved, and so on. So I was just making the point that this is not a big conspiracy theory or anything. It's very normal for us not to have those plans. But final question is, so why was part of your recommendation to spend $65,000 replace an irrigation line?
And Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Solomon, that was merely kind of an insurance, because that irrigation line, we can tell from, I don't know exactly where it is, but I can tell from where the valves are, the rough alignment of where it is, and it will be in the same general area where the path is. So if there's a major break on that line, it could take out the path. That's the only reason that we made that suggestion.
So basically, since we're down there doing the work, excavating everything, probably have access to it, it makes sense to replace it prior to doing all that work, paving it, and then 6 months from now having a leak and having to tear up the golf path and going and then replacing it and then replacing the golf path, so it'll end up costing us a lot more.
Yeah, again, speculation on my part. If there was a break, what type of break would it be? What would the disturbance be? It wouldn't be proper for me not to bring forward that option to council, just so that we paint as full a picture as possible for you.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Nicholson.
This might be for Roz. What's the gross sales for the push course? Or Chris?
Councilmember Nicholson, Mayor and Council, I do not have that number, but we can get that for you.
Thanks.
Mr. Mayor, I think I have that number.
Okay, Mr. Gephardt, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, so for fiscal year 23, total revenues were $414,225.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Kiesler, you have a breakdown of this option, and I don't know if Mr. Rothschild, if I can ask this question or not, but for the bridge to replace it, what would the breakdown be? Obviously, the existing bridge would have to be demolished. And
you may ask that question. That's a fine question.
Okay, thank you.
So the breakdown of this, Mayor Winfield, is mobilization, $5,300, clearing and grubbing, $3,400, demolition of the existing bridge and supports was $40,300, and the reason there's such a difference there between the PATH proposal and this proposal is because it's going to be the same equipment used to pick the new bridge in. So we're not renting things twice. Abutment excavation was $8,100. Abutment backfill was $3,200. Aggregate base course for the approach slabs was $1,000. Concrete for the abutments, and that includes reinforcing steel, was at $47,000. I'm giving you rough numbers here.
$47,000 was what?
For the concrete and the reinforcement steel for the abutments. And this will not have a center pier. It will rest on the abutments themselves. The prefabricated bridge assembly site assembly of the prefabricated bridge was $51,000. Some asphalt repair for the cart paths was $5,500. The approach and departure railing was $4,300. Oh, I missed the big one. Sorry, the bridge itself was $163,000.
Okay, so let me, what was the 51,000? Because I thought that was the bridge.
That's the assembly.
That's labor.
That's a labor and equipment rental. Geotechnical evaluation and the report for the abutments was 18,000. And the structural design was 6,700. So all that totals up to about $356,000.
The 18,000 is for geotechnical testing, is that?
No, well, geotechnical design, and because the geotechnical will design the actual abutment. Mm-hmm. They'll have a structural working for them to do that.
So in the SCI report, when it says short term, you know, that there's some work that could be done so that the bridge is serviceable for the short term. Short term meaning what?
You know,
3 years, 5 years.
Yeah, I was going to say I have an issue with that because the bridge itself. Again, this all rolls down to common sense versus code. Common sense says the bridge has stood out there for 40 years. It can stand out there for a little while longer, but it's going to need to be addressed. If we now know that we have a bridge that does not meet code, and somebody hurts themselves on it, then we're in a less than optimum position from a legal standpoint.
Councilmember Nicholson.
I was just going to mention, I asked about the gross sales, and it's $400,000. If only 1% of the people walk it, that would be $4,000 a year of income from people walking. Probably half the people would still probably walk it, so you're probably, imagine, only $2,000. So initially you supported more so doing the bridge because it kind of makes sense to spend a little bit more to have the bridge, but I think I kind of am walking that back a little bit now, knowing how little is actually spent on the gross sales of the bridge being there versus just walking. I think I probably would more support the PATH walkway. But.
Any additional questions? Councilmember Bond?
Just a real brief comment. I'm going to vote against ratification, and here's why. I have a question for finance. If we were to spend $394,000 on the bridge. Can the community center fund afford it as of today?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that would be certainly a large hit to our community center fund reserves. We could afford it, but we're obviously, I mean, moving forward, that's going to hamstring what we can do for other types of projects that might be coming down the pipe that we're planning for the community center fund as well. So. So yes, the short answer is yes, but it's going to have ongoing impacts to what we can do moving forward for that fund.
I should have asked the question in more quantitative nature. After making a capital expense such as this, what would the year-end anticipated reserves in the community center fund be taking this money out as a new capital expense?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, so our most recent estimate of community center fund reserves where we planned on ending up this fiscal year was about $1.4 million, assuming about roughly a $400,000 cost, unplanned cost. I would say it's going to be roughly around $1 million. That would be our new forecast.
Okay, so thank you. I believe I heard we'd still have $1 million, and that's a reason why I feel like I would reject the motion to ratify. I think we can build a new bridge. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Another financial question. How much money is that half-cent sales tax that was originally approved for the community center golf course going to generate this year?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, I believe our estimate is around $3.7
million. $3.7
million.
That is in addition to all the revenue that the golf course is generating, and that $3.7 million now has been reallocated by council action to other recreation facilities. In fact, the council put a maximum limit on the amount of money the golf course...
Council Member Solomon... I think we're going a little bit off topic here talking about how other funds are being spent.
Well, all right. My topic is the Community Center Fund can certainly afford it. The Community Center Fund is funding a lot of other recreational facilities, including the Ron Hoff Park bond, including the preserve. So that is a false argument that spending money on a bridge for the golf course, which is originally the generator of all this fund and is breaking even, will leave no money. I'm sorry. That argument is completely false and upside down. The town has the money to do this if they wish. It's a matter of where they're putting the money, and this golf course is generating all the funds being used for these other projects.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
All right, thanks. I usually listen to this argument and let it pass, but I don't feel like I can tonight. The Community Center Fund sales tax was passed unilaterally by council on a 4-3 vote. This council, on a 6-0 vote, expanded the use of that sales tax with the exact same authority that passed it to begin with, through the same mechanisms, ordinances, and et cetera. So the continually saying that the Community Center Fund sales tax is just for the community center and the golf courses is just not the case. This council was passed that at the same thing. So the argument about the Community Center Fund, not the Community Center Fund, I mean, I would rather be able to replace the bridge, but I'd also rather do something that doesn't take all the capital that has been allocated to this course. So, you know, but I do think that the Community Center Fund can afford that, and even at the end of the year, if we replace the bridge, would still have $1 million balance. And there are a lot of projects. It probably shouldn't even be called the Community Center Fund anymore, because now that can be allocated to Parks and Recreation. So maybe that's something we should look at in the future, but thank you.
Mr. Kiesler, the proposed alignment of the path has been cleared. Could you briefly explain why it's been cleared?
Mayor Winfield, the golf operator took it upon himself to go ahead and clear that, and I believe it was to provide some means for the walkers to not have to walk all the way around with the way the cart path was going. Okay. I believe. I'm speculating right now.
Okay. All right. Thank you. You know, listening to the discussion. I personally favor replacing the bridge. I think when you look at the expenses, yes, it is more, but I have been out on site, and I, you know, of course, the bridge isn't just serving the walkers; it's serving the golf carts as well. Now, I have some concerns just with the steepness of the proposed new path. I think there's potentially some erosion problems. There's drainage that will be going across the surface of the path. It will be a constant maintenance issue. It feels to me a little bit like we're you know, being penny wise and a little bit pound foolish. And so I probably will not vote in favor of the motion because I support replacing the bridge with a bridge. Councilmember Solomon.
Almost a point of order. If if we were more interested in going with replacing the bridge, so it is different than ratifying the prior motion, how would we, would it be helpful if, since I made the motion and the mayor seconded it, to withdraw that motion?
The motion to ratify has to be processed because there was an error in a prior motion that passed. So you must either ratify the prior motion or vote the prior motion down through the ratification and then propose a new motion.
Okay, thank you.
Let's do that.
Any more discussion? All in favor, say aye. All those that oppose, say nay.
Nay.
Nay. The nays have it, 6-0. So I make a motion to approve funding to replace the bridge with the bridge that is being proposed in kind.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Mr. Mayor, can you specify in your motion that it comes from the Community Center Fund similarly to the previous motion?
I'm happy to do that. So I move to approve funding of replacing the bridge from Community Center Funds.
I second that.
Vice Mayor?
It may seem contradictory, but I am going to vote in favor of replacing the bridge. Part of the reason for that is I think that no matter what the future of this course is, whether it remains a course or whether at some point becomes a park and a walking path due to the water issues, I think that the bridge provides utility either way, more so than the walking path. So, yeah.
Any more discussion? Councilmember Nicholson?
I was just going to say I appreciate your points, Joe, and I do agree. Like, having the bridge, not dealing with the wash and the water going over it and the continued maintenance, and that's also an added expense and frustration, maybe even just wear and tear on the golf courts themselves, which we haven't talked about. So, yeah, I think I prefer the $6 popcorn.
Right. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay? The ayes have it, 6-0. We're going to take a 10-minute break. I'd like to resume the regular session. If you could please end your conversations and take your seats. Mr. Standish, item 2 of the regular agenda.
Public hearing, ordinance number 024-05, amending section 6-10-5 of the town code to decrease the number of members on the Historical Preservation Commission from 7 to 5 members.
Thank you. This item was requested by Councilmember Solomon and Mayor Winfield. Councilmember Solomon, I'll turn the floor over to you.
Thank you. I have been the council liaison to the Historical Preservation Commission for a good number of years. That commission traditionally, particularly the last 5 or so years, has had difficulty in getting volunteers to that are interested in serving on the commission, and therefore has consistently had less than the 7 members, many times 5 members. And that's resulted in a problem with
them obtaining a quorum for the meeting. This past year, several meetings had to be canceled for lack of a quorum. They have a fairly light workload. It's not really necessary that they have seven members. So the thought was it would make a lot of sense to reduce it to five members, which is what we currently have serving on the commission, so that they're able to more easily obtain quorums and actually conduct business.
Thank you, Councilmember Solomon. I don't have anything to add. There's a public hearing with this agenda item. I'm going to open the public hearing now. I have no blue cards for this item. If you'd like to speak to this topic, this is your opportunity to do so. See no one leaving their seats. I'm going to close the public hearing. And I move to adopt ordinance number 024-05, amending section 6-10-5 of the town code to decrease the number of members on the Historical Preservation Commission from 7 to 5 members.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 6-0. Mr. Standish, item 3 of the regular agenda.
Resolution number R24-08, discussion of possible action regarding amendments to the Town of Oro Valley Comprehensive Economic Development Plan.
Community and Economic Development Director, Mr. Melcher, will present this item. Welcome, Mr. Melcher.
Thank you, Mayor, members of Council. Paul Melcher, Community and Economic Development Director. The resulting presentation that you have in front of you tonight is based on the comments that I received from Town Council at the February 21st work session regarding amendments to the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategies. There was a question that was posed after the meeting a little bit more pertaining to the why we were doing this. The Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy was passed in fiscal year 19 to create the pathway to discuss various aspects of economic development for the town. As we're nearing about a year and a half toward the end of the document life, it was recommended through the strategic plan that we take an analysis of the SEDs, take stock of what we'd completed, what items are still remained to be scheduled for completion or to start work on. In this case, we actually looked at, from a staff perspective, on some of the ways that we can consolidate this. So year to date, or actually plan year to date, we've accomplished completing 55% of the objectives that were identified as part of the SEDs. You can see also that we have on schedule to be completed another 21%. The ones that are on hold are actually part of the document discussion pertaining to the consolidation, or in some cases that you've recommended as part of that work session, removal of some of the objectives that seem no longer pertinent, or as you identified, we're better served as being completed by the private sector. Tonight, if you remember my first presentation, I incorporated the entire document on one page. It was not a PowerPoint presentation. It was meant to have easier access. Based on the comments that Town Council provided at the work session, though, I broke each one down again so that the text could be highlighted, reviewed by Town Council one last time to look at the following components. It was again discussing the rationale for the recommendation of the amendment, looking at a final version that originated from the study session, and then includes all the elements that Town Council had provided at the work session. So if there are no further questions, I'd just like to jump into the presentation for Amendment 1. So as you see here on the left, we have the rationale. We were looking at combining these because they were looking at a similar work effort. The study session notes are included below on the outcome, where you can see that those were the recommended changes with a final version. Rather than reading the entire recommended version, if Town Council would like to take a look at that, if there are any last-minute edits, we can capture those. Otherwise, I'll just keep going there, and then we can take one final motion at the end of the presentation. Okay, seeing no questions for amendment number 1. Amendment number 2, the rationale. What we were looking at is we knew that this is one of the items that we had accomplished and considered complete, but we know that economic factors change on a continual basis. So we wanted to make sure that while we're looking at updating our incentives, that we do so on a regular basis. Even if we recommend no changes, at least make that presentation to town council so we keep the incentive discussion pertinent. In short, we just designed this to make an annual reporting element and make it an ongoing item. For amendment number three, we are looking at another one of these that we'd like to take from a completed status to an ongoing status. UACI is up and running. The tenant cohort is full. It's full on a continual basis. There's a waiting list. So we're looking at opportunities for expansion. We know that at the existing site, there's an additional 2,000 square foot of possible expansion, or looking at other options as those might arise. But this is to restructure this objective to reflect the possibility of expansion.
Vice Mayor.
All right, thanks. I do have one sort of concern with this, which is that it mentions including future facility and operational expansions supported by the town. So to me, that feels a little bit like a blank check in terms of saying we're going to be helping pay for some of the UA Center for Innovation expansion. And maybe that's something that we do want to do, but I would like to look at that a little bit more critically together before we do that and take a look at that specifically. In this case, I would like to see a little bit more data about our current Center for Innovation and if we've been able to launch any businesses successfully, if those have taken hold in Oro Valley, what kind of impact that's having on the community of Oro Valley and the economic background in Oro Valley to try to determine what operational and facility expenses we would contribute to. So, I mean, I guess I'm kind of fine with it being passed the way it is, but just with the caveat that before those decisions were made, I'd really like the council to have the opportunity to look at that a lot more in depth.
So, Vice Mayor Barrett, thank you for the question. As part of what I've been working on with the Executive Director, Eric Smith, includes that we've been looking to develop that value statement from UACI and for the other incubators that they have. They have a one-page summary sheet detailing the amount of investment that's occurred, the amount of new jobs, the amount of businesses. We need to create that same sheet because as we present this concept to town council, we want to capture the same information that they're using for the overall UACI concepts throughout the county. So yes, that's exactly what we would like to present to town council before making any type of decision or commitment. The other commitment that I made to town council as part of the study session discussion was that, yes, we understand that there are the town already has some ongoing obligations of operational support. We want to engage other stakeholders to take up some of that slack so that if we do look at the expansion, I want to have in place already those operational commitments so the town would be somewhat capped on that, reaching out to other stakeholders to help support that before we would make any final commitments and then those recommendations to town council. So that's my commitment to town council, is to make sure that we have those operational support in place before we even get to that point of recommending the expansion, because there's no use expanding a building if there's not enough operational support to make it work.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Councilmember Green and then Councilmember Bowen.
In conjunction with what the Vice Mayor has just said, if you look at the second line, Oro Valley Incubator, Accelerator, and Innovation Park, to include a future facility, I would, after the park, put in review of current performance and consideration of a future facility so that we would review it before we jump in.
Councilmember Bowen.
A question for Mr. Melcher. Do they have the entitlement to expand by 2,000 feet as of today?
Mayor Winfield and Councilmember Bowen, I'm not
land
sure.
Land entitlement.
So, yes, we would work that out because the UACI is renting the current facility. We would work with Neil Simon, who's the current owner of that the land and the facility, to work out the expansion details for that. Because there would have to be worked out, how does the future rent work, inuring to the benefit of the developer, all of those considerations.
Okay, and to reiterate what I think the Vice Mayor and Councilmember Green's points, I'm not necessarily in favor of the town supporting this directly at this point without a lot more data, because we have infrastructure needs here in the town, huge infrastructure needs, in my opinion, that no one's going to help us with, and I think we have to keep our eye on that. I invest in these types of companies. This is not a philanthropic effort. To me, this is a U of A branded effort. It's a good place to locate their incubator in Oral Valley. There was land here to do it. But this is not created for the benefit of Oral Valley. There might be some coincidental benefit. People like working at the incubator and open a business in Oral Valley. But I believe we asked that a year ago if there was any evidence of, you know, any tangible benefit to Oral Valley, and I haven't heard any yet. So perhaps there is, and I look forward to hearing it if there is. That's my comment, Mr. Mayor.
So I support Councilmember Green's language that he added to this. I also want to add that supported by the town, I mean, the focus has been on financial support, but there's nothing in this statement that commits the town financially. Support can mean a variety of things. So I support Councilmember Green's added language to this about the, you know, review.
Yeah, Mayor and members of council, if I am successful in securing not only operational or construction support, that's the best of both worlds. You're right, I don't want to overcommit town resources to this, but I also understand that when we look at it, it's been functional for 2 years. So you're looking at an incubator that's in an incubation stage itself, having gone through, if you're looking to for new companies to go through the incubation process and then either become companies to be acquired or whatever that looks like, that's a year process in and of itself. We try to encourage them to fail faster, to look at product development, and if it's not a viable product or it doesn't look like it's viable moving forward, then reassess, move on, and or open that spot up for other companies that might be looking to incubate. So that's what we know from with the executive director, that we need to demonstrate that value and what that means to the town. To all of your comments, I absolutely agree that when you look at it overall, it's the value statement of what it provides in terms of not only job creation, company creation, but how it also affiliates with all the other primary employers in town and how that helps support indirect research, that affiliation. So those are things that we're working on already. But we do need to demonstrate that to your satisfaction.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yeah, I was going to be supportive of Mo's statement too, the change of the wording. And yeah, I do believe putting money into the innovation is good. I think it's important. I mean, job creation is the most important thing, and if we can support incubators, but you do want to see how successful. I know you said 2 years, it's still an incubation stage of itself, but I'd like to have a report of, like, look, these are the businesses that have came in, here's how long they've been, here's the ones that failed, here's the ones that succeeded, if we had any succeed, which, you know, incubators, they're meant for businesses to go and find out that don't actually work, but which is fine. You want to give the opportunity to people. But also a leap pad, like, I don't know, after the incubation page, like, stage, where they go from there, are we supporting them to start and open up their new business? I mean, even if they're not in Oro Valley, if they still stay in the area of Tucson, it's great. So I don't know what kind of support structure we have, but just a report on something about it in general would be nice, I think, for the entire council.
Okay. I think we can go on to the next one.
Okay. Amendment 4 combined 5 separate objectives. But the objectives were all linked together with some common language and common work effort. So we thought that just having one objective that addressed them all made a lot more sense. You'll notice the study session notes where we made it specific to bioscience, aerospace and defense, and emerging tech clusters, and then coming up with that final version. It reflects all of your comments.
Okay.
All right. Amendment number 5 was we were looking at common themes for another one. The specifics here were we wanted to have a focus on that tech transfer for Oro Valley It's great to look at it from a regional perspective, but having that Oro Valley specific aspect of it, we felt it was more pertinent to that work effort than what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay.
All right. Amendment number 6 combines two objectives that have similar themes, again, for our common work plan. We look to amend 1.2.6, but then just get rid of 1.2.7, thinking that as we create this entrepreneurial ecosystem, that we would pull out some of those solopreneurs anyway as part of that effort. Or if we have specific outreach, we didn't want to segregate or separate those, considering all of them as entrepreneurs.
Okay.
Amendment 7 was just a clarification. We were looking at, we understand that we want talent attraction in Oro Valley, but it was already assuming that we would do something about it without determining what that feasibility is. There are going to be several factors that fall into this, how we go about some kind of recruitment strategy, so it was more focused on determining feasibility rather than committing us to a specific strategy that was already assumed.
Councilmember Bowen.
I had a quick question. Upon your reviewing that list again, accountants, architects, artists, artisans, engineers, scientists, management consultants, and others to Oro Valley, my personal experience has been the town has needed, in talking to my doctors, to recruit medical professionals to be here on site. But most of these other expertise areas don't really need to be local in 2023, 2024 in order to succeed. Has any consideration been given to that, to really focus on stuff that actually would benefit by being in the town itself? And to me, the one that just jumps out, perhaps artists and artisans, but medical professionals. This seems like an awful long list, but most of these people don't really need to actually locate in the town to provide service to the town. And just wondering if we're focusing on medical professionals or we're just taking this broad-based approach.
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Bowen, it's not an inclusive list. It's not a specific target list. It's just representative of what those could be. I have not gone through a preliminary assessment of what that needs is. But overall, the attraction would be you'd want them, excuse me for a second, you'd want these professionals living and working in the community. You're right. Remote work and some other opportunities allow for that flexibility. But if the intent is to take a look at what that deficiency might be and then take some active steps to recruit, and I do believe that's why we included medical professionals as part of that expanded list.
Okay, to provide some context, do we have a track record in any of these other areas where we've actually been able to attract professional expertise because of, you know, town proposals or town initiatives?
Mayor Winfield and Councilmember Bowen, I'm not aware of any, and that's why it would be the feasibility analysis of that. I haven't started this initiative. It's not planned, you know, for the immediate next fiscal year. It's just something that we wanted to do. If this becomes part of a strategic plan element, is just redefine it to make sure that it's workable for us. So I don't have any data or any preliminary work on that to be able to provide you that information.
Thank you, Mr. Melcher. That was my comment.
Okay.
All right. Amendment number 8 was, you were recommending striking this. This was the co-worker space that the town council during the work session felt as though it would be better addressed by the private sector. So the simple recommendation is to strike that objective.
Okay.
Amendment number 9 was combining the two languages. Excuse me, the objectives with similar language and expected outcomes. We were looking at the peak performance, continual process improvement, combining those two elements just to address that. So there wasn't a distinction between the two. We use tech on a continual basis. It's part of our work program. So there was just looking at continual performance incorporates all of those elements.
Okay.
Objective 9 combines two objectives with similar language and expected outcomes. We understand that competitiveness is always a question. We're actually looking at a regional level right now in concert with Sun Corridor. So both of these elements would be combined in order to address that as a more is a broader concept rather than specifying each individual work plan.
Okay.
Objective 11 is another one that was related to common work, but more to marketing. We wanted to look at more of a cohesive marketing strategy that would incorporate all of these elements, because we understand that marketing overall has a broader impact than just on a focus on primary employers, small employers, all of those components. It should be a more cohesive marketing and branding effort for the town, how that extends out through all of the things that we do, not only for economic development.
Okay.
The rationale for Amendment 12 is to combining the objectives with similar language and related outcomes for annexation. We know that annexation is a continued discussion, anticipating some type of update to our annexation strategies. These were very specific in terms of trying to identify that, and I don't know that it's attainable for each one of the goals that we have for annexation to identify this, particularly with the amount of acreage that we still have left in Innovation Park. So it was allowed more flexibility in that, just to figure out what makes sense pertinent to annexations.
Vice Mayor?
Yeah, how about the code changes that we made that allow for a lot of primary employers on a lot of our vacant commercial land, which we're being told we have quite a bit of vacant commercial land. So can we add something about that to continue to look for maybe commercial land that we have that could also be used for primary employment uses and development on those parcels as well? Because I think that was part of why we did that, but I don't feel, well, I don't know what you've all been doing. So I'm not sure we're promoting those as opportunities for primary employment as well.
So Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, we actually have gone through the town. I can't recall the date offhand, but we have allowed in C1, C2 tech light uses that would accommodate a lot of tech. So you could have warehousing, lighter manufacturing, or research and development related to C1 and C2. So we already have those components in place.
Right. Yeah, so we put that in place, and that was part of the original strategy. But now this seems to me to be more about marketing those, facilitating the development of those, making those available to site selectors and primary employers, offering those up, et cetera, for that usage.
So is there language?
Mr. Melcher, do you think that this language would sort of allow for that as well? Or do we need language that would specify? I feel like the undeveloped parcels in the town's planning area that are optimal for primary employment uses, that should sort of just include C1 and C2. So I guess it's more of a comment that I'd like to see it understood that we're including that, and I'd like to see us work towards promoting those areas for primary employment development as well.
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, thank you for the clarification. I think it's assumed in there that it would not be restricted. It's undeveloped parcels. So I would say right now we haven't had one instance. We've been tracking the efficacy of those rezonings, understanding that we're just now seeing the return of whatever second, third generation retail is to those spaces. We were hoping at the time of adoption of those tech light uses in C1 and C2 that you would see adaptive reuse. It was still so specific in terms of the change in consumer habits, the change in delivery systems, right as COVID impacted the adaptive reuse. I think that we'll see more the Van Goghs, the Aldis coming back for that second, third generation retail than we would for the C1, C2, but that also might factor into our strategies. You were asking about an accelerator space. Those also might be some opportunities for some soft landing spaces, depending on what we're looking at. So maybe I'm going on a roundabout way of not answering your question. Vice Mayor, if you could help me understand, did I help, or did that?
I think I'm more not so much talking about parcels that are in malls or strip malls, but more those undeveloped parcels that are zoned for commercial that we're seeing rezonings on that are large enough to house primary employment uses. You know, we made those available. Are we offering those up every time we have an option? Do we have those in our database? Are we actively marketing those and trying to get those moving forward for primary employment uses? And I understand we just made that change prior to COVID. Then there's COVID and it's coming around. So, I mean, we know we made the change, but are we utilizing the change? I think that's kind of more.
So Mayor Winfield and Vice Mayor Barrett, absolutely, because on Choose Oro Valley on the site selectors page, every one of those vacant parcels or vacant spaces is mapped out and available for analysis. We even include the analysis for utilities, or space, loading docks, all of those factors that would be necessary for a site selector to make a determination. So, yes.
Okay, great. Thanks. So I'm fine with this language. I just want to be clear that, to me, it's not only about annexation. It would also be parcels within the town.
Because I think, Mayor and Vice Mayor Barrett, even as we work with Honeywell, which we know is in the town technically but not officially, that would be one of the partners that we might consider for discussion, annexation, looking at available spaces. We know that we've been working in partnership with the county because the Honeywell has offered parts of the entire facility for lease or for rent. So that would be something that we could take a look at as an opportunity.
Thank you.
Next.
The last one was recommendation regarding strategies related to cultural and performing arts. And that was the addition to the final version on amending 1.82. And that was an origination from Councilmember Jones Ivey. It was not part of the original recommendation for any of the amendments, just to give you some of that perspective. We were looking at it. The discussion seemed to be more around programmatic than anything else, but that's why this is up for consideration with that proposed language.
Vice Mayor?
Yes. I like the item where it says collaborate with public and private tourism and partners and businesses to develop a more robust destination visitor strategy. Of course, I think with us needing to take on that destination visitor strategy ourselves with concluding our partnership with Visit Tucson, that's very important for us to have in our economic development plan. I'm a little concerned about singling out, including strategies related to cultural and performing arts that take advantage of facilities and amenities in Oro Valley and its immediate surrounds. I'm not opposed to that, but I would like to either not single out that and remove it, or to add additional things like including strategies related to cultural and performing arts, parks and recreation, historical amenities, etc. Because I feel like when we're talking about collaborating with our tourism partners to develop a robust destination visitor strategy, I see that as a little more comprehensive. Like our cycling resources are amazing. We've got mountain biking, road biking, paths. We've got parks and recreation with more coming online. We've got golf. We've got, you know, a lot of those great things, hiking, trail systems. So when I'm thinking about making a destination visitor strategy, I think of it a little bit more comprehensively.
Anybody? I'm in agreement. So provided that, so expanding upon the statement of cultural arts and performing arts to those other possibilities.
So Mayor and members of the council, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, so to speak, but that does encompass the strategies that we have been discussing. What you just detailed, we've already been detailing as part of our transition from our agreement with Visit Tucson over to the town functioning as the destination marketing organization. So if you left 1.8.2 as it is in the original text, that would be part of it. To that point, we are looking at all options understanding that we already have some quick wins, some successes that we can build on, looking at group bookings, looking at shoring up the foundation of what we've been successful at as a town with the resorts, and then looking to build and expanding. I think that's part of the discussion. So I think that the original text encompassed all of that, because if you're looking at all the facilities, all the amenities, that could include a lot of our stakeholders. You have theaters, you have Tohono O'Toole, you have other event spaces that might be conducive to a variety of other tourism opportunities.
I think I support the original text that was provided for the purposes that have been outlined. Councilmember Nicholson.
In reference to this and leaving Visit Tucson, what about Simple View and doing a partner? I mean, they're based out of here and they help organizations all throughout the United States and even the world. Shouldn't we have something about working with Simple View, the DMO provider for all these different states and countries?
Well, Mayor Winfield and Councilmember Nicholson, at this, I would hesitate to put anything that specific into a work plan, because if Simple View were to be acquired or if it changes, then that would seem to just direct that specific. When we provide more detail regarding how we're treating the town, how we're looking at the DMO strategies for the town, then we can get into more detail about that.
All right, I think the original objective text is what the council was favoring.
So, Mayor, that was just the summary of all of the comments that I had heard from the work session. I understand that there are blue cards.
I do have blue cards, and so okay. I appreciate your presentation. After blue cards, we can go back to if there's any additional questions. So, again, when your name is called to come to the podium, if you'd state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley, Charlie Hurt.
My name is Charlie Hurt, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. I come before you to talk about Amendment 13 and revised 1.8.2, strategies related to cultural and performing arts. I've read a lot of economic development plans, certainly not as many as Mr. Melcher, but I've read a lot of them, and they all talk about, at one point or another, what makes a good town. And one word, amenities. Now, as we mature as a town, notice we're now 50 years old, as we mature as a town, mature towns often focus more strongly on the arts and the performing arts, not to say that other amenities are swept back or ignored, but mature towns begin looking at the arts and the performing arts. We already have some very good art issues here in the town. The community art project, Dick Eggerding, that's a wonderful project. But I ask that council consider putting in, and I take Vice Mayor Barrett's comments, I would ask that you put in and keep in strategies related to cultural and performing arts, and again, taking Vice Mayor Barrett's comments and other things, and I don't have the words here. I will leave it to the Vice Mayor to come up with the proper words. But the ask here from someone who is involved in the Oro Valley Theater Company as their treasurer. But the ask here is not for council to do something or to create a performing arts center. The ask is for council to partner with existing and developing groups to move toward such a center. I believe that the cultural and performing arts are indeed in our nature, and I hope that this council agrees. Thank you for the honor of your time.
Dick Eggerding.
My name is Dick Eggerding. I'm a resident of 36 years, and I've been involved with the town about 30. And I'm speaking tonight to support this amendment. That wonderful Professor Hertz did a great job of explaining what really is the foundation of this community. The arts, in my opinion, are the heart of a community. All the other stuff is okay. But if without the heart, you don't have much. And I think what I'd like to say, first of all, I'm not here representing the memorial. I'm representing myself as a citizen. But if you don't mind, I'll draw on some of my experiences with the memorial. When I first approached the council some years ago, I proposed that we do a feasibility study, and that the feasibility study itself would support the need for such a facility that we had. We took about 8-9 months of a variety of ways to find out what people really thought about a facility such as the memorial. It was overwhelming. It was just shocking almost when we got down to the bottom line. So we use that as a basis then to go forward and what you are seeing built right there in Naranja Park. We could not have done it without the feasibility study. Now, that leads me to another point. There is no reason, after achieving a good feasibility study, that you can't go back to those same people and to the public in general who believe in what this is and get the funding going right there. It's not all that remarkable to say that we're building something that is meaningful by the citizens, and it's not being done by taxation or anything else. I go back, if you'll forgive me, to 2004. I was chairman of a thing called the Naranja Task Force. We had just finished a bond issue, and we were trying to find out what should we do with this facility. We put out a notice, and we held meetings, a series of meetings. And 124 stakeholders showed up at all of those meetings. And out of that came a need for, you heard it, a public facility for the arts. When we came back and had a drawing made up of this facility, we showed here the Performing Arts Center. And it was astonishing, out of the 124 proponents, over half of them wanted this kind of facility. So I'm saying that I support whatever they are willing to work at, because it's going to take a lot of work. It's not that simple. But it's well worth trying. And if nothing else, it's going to get the public involved in something that they weren't involved in before. Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate it very much.
Judy Rodman.
So good evening, and thank you, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, and council members for the opportunity to speak. As he said, my name is Judy Rodman. I've lived in Oro Valley for 19 years, and I have a great passion for the arts. I'd like to provide an historical background of the Oro Valley Theater Company. I believe that behind every negative, there is a positive. That's my personal philosophy. After recovering from breast cancer in 2016, I developed neuropathy from the chemotherapy, and there was no more tap dancing or tennis for me. And that's the negative, but here's the positive. In 2017, a year later, after realizing there was no live theater in Oro Valley, I had an aha moment, an opportunity to bring more culture to Oro Valley. So I engaged others dedicated to the arts, and by July 2017, we created a nonprofit organization the Oro Valley Theater Company, fulfilling our passion for theater arts and a cultural need we felt in the community. And the proof is in the pudding, I think, because for the past 7 years, OVTC, Oro Valley Theater Company, has been playing to full houses each, and which translates to 3,000 people per season. Our mission is to nurture the heart and soul of Oro Valley and the surrounding communities by bringing quality live theater, both on stage and off stage. We embrace the following ancient Native American proverb: tell me a fact and I will learn it. Tell me a truth and I will believe it. But tell me a story and it will live in my heart forever. And that's what our theater company strives to do, to tell stories from the stage that may live and resonate in the hearts of our audiences forever. The arts connect people throughout the world, throughout the ages, from Shakespeare to Van Gogh to the Beatles. When words, music, and painted images have universal themes, they weave a universal circle of humanity. According to Paul Melcher, quote, landing the Van Gogh exhibit in Oro Valley reinforces the town's reputation as a premier arts and cultural community. Since the schools are fully booked, Oro Valley really doesn't have a facility to present plays, musicals, or large concerts to bring people to our beautiful community ensconced in the Catalina Mountains. I know, I'm almost through. So with wonderful trails for walking, golf courses for golfing, an aquatic center for swimming, retail and restaurants for spending, and hopefully a home to house spectacular events. Together, let's make Oro Valley a magnificent mind and body mecca. Thank you.
Bill Rodman.
I'm Bill Rodman, lived here for 19 years. I just found out from her testimony. I had a number of things to say, but I got thrown off check because you guys went ahead and made decisions before any of us talked, which kind of surprised me, having sat in one of your seats. And all of a sudden, the cultural and performing arts was already decided that, no, we don't want that in there. We want the original, even though there was a motion made by Joyce Jones-Ivey, Councilmember Jones-Ivey, and the mayor to second it, to have this put in there. So it surprises me that we're in a situation where the reason that you need a cultural and arts, performing arts identification in this is because people don't necessarily think of economic development as cultural and performing arts. Yet we all know it. Mr. Melcher knows that. But nowhere in this entire economic development plan was there until now, or until a minute ago, any mention of cultural and performing arts. None. So if you want to put, Vice Mayor Barrett, I understand, you want to put more things there, put more things in there, but leave the cultural and performing arts in there as something that when they read that paragraph, they say, oh, okay, let's think about that. It's one of the economic development things. If you don't say it, nobody's ever going to know it unless somebody shows up like me at the meeting and raises it. So I think we're going backwards. I mean, I don't know whether we'll ever get to a performing arts center. I have no idea. And that isn't what this is. This is just recognizing the value to the town of the kind of cultural and performing arts. And so that's important to me. I'm sorry. I can't stand up here much longer. But I really would appreciate you going back and putting it in and adding if necessary. Because otherwise we lose a great deal of the understanding of the value of culture and performing arts. Thank you very much.
Sasha Case.
She had to leave.
Joe Ersig.
He had to leave.
Dean Abravea.
Good evening. My name is Gene Abravaya. My wife Terry and I have been residents of Oro Valley since 2017.
You've heard about the benefits of a performing arts center. Perhaps I can speak about the practicalities of a performing arts center. Before I retired, I was the managing and artistic director for Spreckles Performing Arts Center, which is owned and operated by the city of Rohnert Park in Northern California. During the 10 years I was in that position, our budget usually reflected the disposition of the city council and the city manager. So at times we were an albatross, at times, thanks to the press that we generated, the favorable press that we generated, we were treated as the city's treasure. One thing that was never disputed and remained consistent throughout my tenure was the fact that each year the Arts Center earned back for the city roughly 70 to 75% of its operating budget from ticket sales, rentals, fees, and concessions. We've heard tonight that the golf course earns for the city $400,000. Well, when I was working for the city of Rohnert Park as their manager for their Performing Arts Center, we earned that every year as well. So over the 10 years that I was there, the Arts Center basically paid back the city of Rohnert Park over $6 million. I believe that's a substantial sum. Today, it is considered a destination point for many travelers on their way to wine country and also on the road to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. I spent most of my life working in the entertainment industry. And for some reason, though, I still don't know why, theater, when it is even thought of as a part of our lives, is more often than not trivialized. But nothing could be farther from the truth. Theater is the mirror of our lives. It's the soul of our lives. It reflects our temperament as individuals, as a society, as a species of our world. It reminds us of our successes, of our failures, of our hopes and dreams. It reminds us of all the things that make us human in a way that is more immediate and impactful than any other form of communication. Oro Valley already has a gem in the Oro Valley Theater Company. Judy Rodman, the artistic director, has not only made it an artistic success, but also a financial success. And the company deserves a home of its own, a place to perform, as well as all of the other performing arts organizations in Oro Valley and the surrounding area. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I have no other blue cards. Mr. Melcher, if you could come back to the podium. Thank you. In regards to this particular amendment, there are examples within the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy. For example, where we've reviewed Amendment Number 7, there's a laundry list of consultant service providers. We have accountants, architects, so on, and others. It's not meant to, it's just to give representative groups of professionals. I think something similar in terms of, so adding, in addition to strategies related to culture and performing arts, to include parks and recreation, historic sites and others. I think I can support that if other council members can support that as well.
Yes.
Mayor, if I could recommend some language then.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
So how about if we do this, and I'll capture it, is after the comma, after strategy, including...
Paul, Mr. Melcher, could you speak into the mic?
Wondered why it feels like
sorry,
it's off.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, no,
maybe
thanks,
it got adjusted. So. There you go. Thank you. We could put in some language after including but not limited to strategies related to cultural and performing arts, then that you would have the culture in there along with some programming related to Steam Pump Ranch, comes to mind there in terms of some the cultural aspects. Then you could also talk about sports, so including strategies related, including but not limited to cultural and performing arts, sports and recreation, and outdoor activities. That might get a pretty comprehensive list to begin, but understanding that if other opportunities arise, then...
Well, and I would say, and others. Or, right. You know, yeah, right. Okay. Is that satisfactory? Okay.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions? Councilmember Solomon?
Yeah. Mr. Melcher, is that, as far as emphasizing the performing arts, is this the best place for it to be, because it's referring to collaborate with public and private tourism partners, businesses, or do you think it's maybe a better location for that where we can emphasize the cultural and performing arts, particularly the issue about taking advantage of facilities and amenities in Ore Valley? Because actually there are, in addition to just the theater, the music hall, I mean, there's facilities at Toho Odom, there's the potential for facilities at the two resorts with some modifications. So in your opinion, is this the best place to do it?
Mayor Winfield and Councilmember Solomon, I would say yes, because at the original creation of the SEDS didn't take into account that we would have concluded our agreement with Visit Tucson. So having it here is the best place because of the infrequent occurrence of the specifics for tourism. So when I look at this, I consider it to be that broad, where the options are such that it's whatever's on the table, whatever we can determine, work with those stakeholders to determine that. I appreciate you mentioning the resorts. There are outdoor spaces that the resorts have even brought up to start revitalizing, that there were even fireworks at Westward Look. There were outdoor concerts. A lot of things that they had let go that they were looking to reestablish. So I think there are opportunities out there for the existing amenities to get started. Could be a long-term strategy, too, redeveloping the foundation of some of the performing arts areas and then looking and building on that seems to be a better strategy than making assumptions, too.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor.
Can I read what I think suggested with an eye towards a motion and see.
Yeah, if you could make it into a motion, that would be great.
Okay. I move to approve the amended economic development strategy, amending section 1.8.2 to say collaborate with public and private tourism partners / businesses to develop a more robust destination visitor strategy, including but not limited to strategies related to cultural and performing arts, sports and recreation, outdoor activities, and other opportunities that take advantage of facilities and amenities in Oro Valley and its immediate surrounds. And amending 1.2.1 to say, support the development of the planned UA Center for Innovation at Oro Valley Incubator / Accelerator and Innovation Park, including review of current performance and consideration of a future facility and operational expansions supported by the town and local stakeholders.
Second. Any discussion? You got it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Melcher. Thank you, members in the audience who spoke to this topic. We'll go to item four. Excuse me, Mr. Standish.
Consideration and acceptance of the Oro Valley Water Utility Annual Report dated April 2024.
Water Utility Director Mr. Abraham will present this item. Welcome, Mr. Abraham.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, members of council, fellow ELT, and members of the audience. So tonight, I'm just going to be presenting to the council the Water Utility Annual Report titled April 2024. In the past, this report has been rendered to council either through a memorandum or there have been presentations in the past. This year we decided to do a quick presentation to council. This isn't something council's approving, it's just they're accepting the report. The Water Utility Annual Report is called the Water Utility Annual Report, April 2024. The report documents the Water Utility Commission activities and actions for calendar year 2023, as well as the finances for fiscal year 2022 and 2023. It's mostly a rearward-looking document, documenting the accomplishments and the activities of the water utility, but it does have some forward-looking items in it. It's required by Article 15-4-5 of the Town Code. It's prepared by the water utility staff. The commission reviews and comments on the report. Town staff renders a report to town council on behalf of the commission, and the report becomes a public document once accepted by the council. The water utility commission highlights, the commission has reviewed, discussed, and developed a preferred water rate scenario with staff, provided a recommendation to council on water rates for fiscal year 23-24, that was last fiscal year, reviewed, edited, and provided recommendations on the 2023 Water Utility Annual Report, reviewed, discussed, and provided a recommendation for council to approve the Arizona Water Banking Firming Agreement that came to council and council unanimously approved, attended guest speaker lectures, and a field trip to tour the Tres Rios Water Reclamation Facility. Some of the financial highlights, the water utility has two utility funds, the Enterprise Operating Fund and the Water Resources System Development Impact Fee Fund. Our debt obligations, our annual debt service for fiscal year 23-24 was $3,753,608. Total outstanding debt as of 6/30/2023 was $18,318,751. The water utility maintains a water utility bond rating of AA from Fitch Ratings and AA plus from Standard & Poor's. Now just talking about some of the major sections of the water utility. Customer service provides service support to the utility's 21,300 accounts and counting. They prepare monthly billings, they process cash receipts, prepare daily deposits, process new meter applications. They also provide monthly billing for Pima County wastewater. This is accomplished through an intergovernmental agreement that we have with Pima County to bill on their behalf, and the utility does receive revenues for that service. We also provide quarterly billing for the town stormwater utility. And in 2023, we responded to over 8,000 customer service questions between the utility's customer service portal and our OV water email. Our water operations group, this group makes up approximately 60% of the staff of the water utility, is our largest team with the water utility. We have five operational teams. We have meter operations, which has one supervisor, four staff, and they are responsible for taking care of all the meters, which is over 21,300 connections. Our other team is our distribution operations. We have one supervisor, five staff, and they're responsible for operating and maintaining the 390 miles of mains, a little over 9,000 valves, and just under 2,500 fire hydrants. Our third operations team is our production operations, one supervisor, five staff, and they're responsible for operating and maintaining the utility's 18 production wells, 18 reservoirs, and 26 booster stations. Our fourth water operations team is our water quality operations staff. We have one supervisor, two staff. They're responsible for ensuring that the little over 1,500 backflow prevention devices are operating properly and protecting our water system. They took a little over 2,600 water quality tests throughout our water system, and all those tests met or exceeded all EPA and Safe Drinking Water Act requirements. And our final water operations team is our water control systems operations, with one supervisor and two staff, and that's responsible for supervisory control and data acquisition system, as well as all instrumentation and control. Our other main function is our engineering and planning group, three major functions. They provide engineering support to water operations, provide water system modeling and contract management support to water operations, as well as approving new development plans, working with the town's community economic development group in those developing, approving those development plans. In 2023, 12 water improvement plans were reviewed and approved. 8 water plans were constructed, inspected, and accepted, as well as the engineering and planning group administers the capital improvement program. This includes our existing system improvements, which includes well rehabilitations, reservoir rehabilitations, booster station rehabilitations, and, of course, our Northwest Recharge and Recovery Delivery System project. Finally, with respect to water resources, some of the highlights. As this council knows, the water utility has three sources of supply, groundwater, CAP water, and reclaimed water. Our groundwater deliveries were for several years now below the 5,000 acre foot per year mark, which was kind of an internal goal that the water utility set for itself. And we were able to achieve that for several years running now, just over 4,900 acre feet of groundwater was delivered. Central Arizona Project water deliveries were just under 2,600 acre feet a year. And that's awesome. Our intergovernmental agreement with the city for CAP wheeling allows us to wheel up to 2,600 acre feet a year, so we always try and get right to that point, and we did it again. Reclaimed water deliveries, this is primarily deliveries for turf irrigation, for the community's golf courses, and we were just under 1,900 acre feet. If you look at the chart right here, which kind of aggregately shows groundwater, CAP water, and reclaimed water. It also shows it for the countryside service area. But a little more overall production for 2023 versus 2022, but just under that production in 2021. Water resources continued. In addition to the water resources that we delivered, the water utility accomplished the following. We utilized CAP water to replace the just under 5,000 acre feet of groundwater we pumped, which is in accordance with the 1980 Groundwater Management Act of Arizona. Between the entitlement or the allocation of CAP water we have of 10,305 acre feet a year, you subtract out replacing the groundwater we pumped, and the deliveries we directly delivered. The rest of that we stored in nearby underground aquifer storage facilities, and that was about 2,800 acre feet of that unused CAP water was stored and became long-term storage credits. That it goes to our long-term storage credit account. So that account now is just under 35,000 acre feet. So that's great. We continue to buy our full CAP allocation, and we continue to store unused CAP water for future use if we need it. Additionally, we stored approximately 10 acre feet of reclaimed water for future use. Our reclaimed water entitlement is based on a calculation that's based on how much potable water we deliver. And between the potable water we deliver, and there's a calculation to how much reclaimed entitlement we're allowed. Take out the reclaimed deliveries that we made, and we had about 10 acre feet left over that we could store and accumulate additional long-term storage credits. And that long-term storage credit balance is a little under 140 acre feet. On the conservation front, we continue with a pretty aggressive community outreach and education programs. We have two youth education programs for grades 1 through 3. We have our Conservation Kids program, and for grades 4 and 5, we have Discover Our Water. We have our Water Smart program. We have now over 7,200 registered accounts. Over 8,000 automated alerts were sent to registered users in 2023, and 45% of the leaks were, as confirmed by customers, were related to irrigation leaks. So this is one of the areas we focus with our customers is operating and maintaining their irrigation system and keeping it in good operating form. Our water audit program, we performed approximately 50 water audits in 2023, and this is where if a customer calls and says, I have high consumption, you know, what can I do? I need help. We have staff that will go to the customer's house, look at how they're irrigating, look at how they have their timers set, just basically look at, do an audit of how they're using water, and that's something the community takes advantage of every year. Also, we have a quarterly newsletter. It's called Behind the Meter, and we had our second successful year of publication of that newsletter.
Peter, this isn't a gotcha, but that 45%, I think in the report it's 60%, not 45%, which actually makes maybe sense since 60 to 70% of residential water use is landscape. But so I just...
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions with respect to the annual water utility report.
Question? I'd like to move to accept the water utility annual report dated April 2024.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Green. Open it up to questions. Councilmember Bowen, Nicholson, then Green.
Could we go back to the chart which shows how we collect credits on reclaimed water? You know, based on something I heard a couple of hours ago from a school administrator saying, you know, I can't afford the reclaimed water to provide fields, and then the thinking, you know, what if we actually brought reclaimed water to Push Ridge, and what if we built Field 7 and 8 in Naranja Park? Would we be able to actually provide water to all of those entities today? On a, you know, using our entitlements, doesn't look like we're saving very much from our entitlement. So I'm a little bit confused in understanding, you know, how much of the reclaimed water are we using as of today without those things, without, you know, any watering at the schools, Field 7 and 8, and Push Ridge. Where would we get the water for those if we were to need it, reclaimed water?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, our intergovernmental agreement that we have with Tucson Water allows us to purchase additional reclaimed water in addition to what we're entitled. So, for example, when we had the Rancho Vistoso 18 holes of golf, we routinely would utilize 200 to 300 acre feet a year in excess of what we were entitled. So we have the reclaim capacity based on the IGA to receive reclaimed water in addition to what we're entitled.
Okay, and is that at a fixed price, or is it at whatever price they're willing to offer it to you when you request it?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's negotiated every year with Tucson Water. Typically, like everything else, it's typically 3 to 5%. We're seeing a 3 to 5% increase every year, and it has to be based on their policies for you know, their council approvals for rate increases to their customers.
And would they have to release some of their water, or is this, you know, reclaimed water just not getting used in the first place? Would someone have to release it to us if we wanted more? I guess
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, this is. They have such a large entitlement of reclaimed water that they can't possibly use it all. And, in fact, they would prefer to sell it to us for the revenue as well as, it, you know, it's good for the region.
Thank you for helping me understand that better. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your questions.
Councilmember Nicholson.
So we just had the schools, and they were talking about having the water, if they were to water their grounds for the year, it cost them like $200,000-$300,000, and at $235 an acre or per 100 or per 1,000 gallons, that's 390 acre feet a year of watering. Like, there are, how much water does our schools use in general? For how many acre feet do they use per year?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, so just to add clarification, like, for example, Ironwood Ridge High School, they're not one of our, they're a Tucson Water customer, but the other schools, We only have one that irrigates with reclaimed water, and that's Painted Sky. All of the other schools irrigate with potable water. You know, athletic fields, you know, if you look at the school athletic fields, I mean, you kind of drive by and they're green. You get up close to them, they're half weeds, half grass. You know, they're kind of ratty looking, but they're good enough for kids to kick a ball on. They don't really use that much water. And in the wintertime, they typically let the grass go dormant. So it's not a, you know, I'm trying to think off of my hand, the top of my head. I mean, it's literally like, I think like 3 to 4 acre feet a year for a typical school field. It's not that much. It's not as much as you would think it would be. How about that?
What about a place like James Creek Park? Much.
So J.D. Key Park uses a little more. I could be wrong on this. You know, I want to say J.D. Key Park is, I think, between like 10 and 20 acre feet a year. I'd like to, if you're going to quote that number, I'd like to get back to you on it.
Even if it's 80 feet, okay. Thanks. That's my question. Thanks.
Councilmember Green.
Hi, Peter. The question I guess I have is about water leaks in private property. We have a number of snowbirds, so to speak, and if they have a water leak, do we have any way of detecting that? I've heard about FlowLogic, that with a new house you could put a FlowLogic system on it, and if they... it detects an increasing use of water, it automatically shuts it off. Is that a feasible kind of thing to look at in terms of conservation and saving water or not?
So, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Dr. Mo Green, we have two angles of attack on that. One is, even if you're not a registered user, we set alarms on all of our customers where if we see continuous use for a 24-hour period, we'll reach out to the customer. If we don't get a response, we'll typically do a drive-by. So one is, we'll see that, and we make every effort to get on top of it. Also, this community's conservation ethic is pretty much outstanding, that even within that 24-hour period, we'll usually get a call from, you know, so we have a lot of people that walk in the mornings, and they'll say, hey, this address, their irrigation's, it's stuck on, it's going down the street. So typically within 24 hours, either we've picked up the leak through our Water Smart program or a customer's called it in. I don't know if there'd really be an advantage to having yet a third layer that a customer would have to buy something and monitor it. I think that's one of the value, some of the additional value that the town of Oro Valley offers its residents is we have these things we do to help them.
Water Smart makes sense. I mean, it's what we can do as a town, but I'm thinking in terms of as new homes are built, that kind of a valve could be part of the requirement as we look into the future of water and water containment.
Oh, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Dr. Mo Green, a great point. It's something that we can think about strategically. We do know those technologies exist, kind of like now, you know, they have all these remote devices, you know, alarm systems, garage door openers, you turn your lights on and off. They have things you put on your water system. But it would be redundant to kind of the service we already provide. But if someone wanted to have even another layer of defense, sure, that's something we can look at. Thank you.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I just want to clarify a little bit on the school fields issue. They used to water the fields at the schools during the wintertime. And now what happens is, for whatever reason, the schools, sounds like it was money based on last night, but for whatever reason, the schools have stopped reseeding the grasses in the winter and watering them. So what happens is, come August, you show up to school, the field is beautiful and green. The kids are excited. They want to be able to play on it. And then within 2 months, it's all dead. And the entire school is just weedy, dead patches. And that's what the kids have to play on every recess, every after school, every lunchtime. And so I've talked to the different schools about it, and I've said, can we get the grass back? We used to have grass. And the reason that winter grass is important for the schools is because that's when the kids are there. The kids are in school. They're out of school at the summertime. So they're there in school. They're playing. The weather's nice enough for them to be outside, and they don't have to be kept inside in the heat. And so they're basically hardly getting any grass to play on. And we have these enormous fields that are just beautiful and have beautiful locations and no grass for the kids. And so to me, that would be a good utilization of the assets we currently have and people that are currently using them, because they get used every single day. So, I mean, I would love to explore further, you know, what we can do. Is it really a financial burden to water those fields? You know, how can we get the schools to have grass? And so, you know, I don't know what that looks like. I know with the Push Ridge course, for example, we let the Push Ridge course have the tier one water rate for the whole rate, because we say, well, it's us, they're a government entity, so they're taking way more water than the tier one rate, and for whatever reason, we just write it off, you know? I don't know if there's something we could do to explore that. So anyway, that's just something based on the, like, having the two things tonight that I'd love to look into further. And I know I'm the one with the youngest children on the, on the council. So, and I agree, the grass isn't great, but there's no grass. So anyway, I think it would be great if we could work together with the districts and the school to help get the grass watered for our kids. Thanks. It's not really a question, just a comment, because it's late at night and it's on my mind.
Thank you for your comment.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Abraham. Appreciate your presentation this evening. Any future agenda items, Council?
No. Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
I'd like on the next council agenda discussion and possible action regarding Oro Valley's participation with Visit Tucson.
I second.
Okay. Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Any other agenda items? Okay. Hearing none, I move to adjourn.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Solomon. All in favor, say aye.
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 Passes 6-0. Good night, everyone. Thank you, staff. Appreciate all your help this evening.